And where's Mr. Roros? I thought he was joining us.
You ready with the
Yeah. Farm? I mean, I don't think he's heard back from them.
I think,
no, he hasn't. That's right.
That's it.
He's thinking that.
I know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody's in the loop, yes. Thank you.
Appropriations with a proper quorum present, and we're meeting jointly with Public Works, Transportation, Labor, and Parks. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We call this meeting of the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee to order.
Mr. Chairman, we have a priority list in order to accommodate the administration and some of the people that will be providing information this morning. And number one, we'll do the second quarter projection with Larry, if we can.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully everyone has a good morning.
Good morning.
Hopefully everyone has a copy of the presentation. If you don't, I have extra copies.
All right, it looks, everybody should have it.
Yeah, it's just
okay. Thank you. Welcome, Legislative Spratling, when we open the floor. I know you weren't there, because I would have noticed the red.
I was here, but then I got a phone call.
All right. I didn't notice the red. That's all I'm acknowledging.
Feisty this morning, aren't we?
Very. I'm very aggravated.
Oh, no.
Bernice is always feisty.
It's only 10.
And the red means what?
Anger.
Blood.
No. Watch out. You're gentle. There we go.
So, Larry, well, let's do it uninterrupted as I usually do, and
that's
then
fine.
We'll dive into some questions because you may have a complete presentation and some questions may be answered in the process. So please go ahead.
Okay. So starting on the first page, which is actually page number two, this just shows by each department the second quarter forecast, which is an update for the entire year versus the modified budget. And actually, it should say, we have adopted modified second quarter total. And the difference is the difference between the second quarter forecast and the modified budget. You can see, looking down, almost every department is showing savings versus budget. And this is net impact on the tax levy by each department. I've taken out the $15.7 million IGT, just so I don't have to keep explaining that we put it in the forecast, but it's not in the budget until the budget amendment for that is done. It makes it easier for discussion purposes, I think, to take that out of the forecast because it's essentially a wash. It shows up on the revenue side. It shows up on the expenditure side. And this gives us a real picture of where we are versus the modified budget. So as you can see, the department with the largest savings is social services. That's largely due to relief, and I'll go into that in a little more detail. One department that is over budget is labs and research, and that is due to the fees that were in the budget, and I'll discuss that in a little more detail, as well as parks and recs, and I'll discuss that. But bottom line is that we're looking at, versus budget, a $22.3 million return of fund balance. And, on the next page, this shows you from an account grouping where these savings are showing up. Largely, it's in annual regular, $6.6
million. What is that?
And that is due to the vacancies that we've had throughout the year that were, sort of a soft hiring freeze, if you will, in terms of filling positions. We've had the early retirement. This The numbers here, the reason we're coming to you so late with this is we wanted to make sure that we encompass the early retirement and voluntary separation. This year, from that, from those two programs, we anticipate a net savings of about $1 million because a lot of the savings, vacancy savings from those early separations will be used for the accrued leave payouts for vacation and sick leave, as well as the county incentive. So a lot of the additional savings is just due to vacancy savings above and beyond what was already factored into the budget. And then there's associated savings in other personal services, which would be fringe benefits. But a large portion of that savings is our health care benefits. We're seeing our actual costs trending lower than what was forecasted in the budget. We're seeing a lot fewer catastrophic cases, which again, you know, could be due to actions that we're taking for disease management, but, you know, is also a random phenomenon in terms of, you know, catastrophic cases. So, and then the other largest area in terms of the account groupings is social services relief. And, you know, caseloads are down somewhat, but, you know, really it's the cost per case that's driving that number there. So basically those three areas, salary, other personal service, and relief, make up the lion's share of the savings, and you can see there's savings in other account groupings as well.
Through the chair, if you don't mind.
Please.
What were the reasons, the savings for the social services relief? Why would there be less case load?
Well, the caseload is actually, and I'll go into that in the next slide. And we could even jump to those slides and then jump back.
No. We want it to be uninterrupted until we get there. Please take notes. If you don't have a clear answer to whatever's in your mind, then we'll dive into questions.
All right, but just a quick answer, and I can go into more detail, is that we aren't really seeing the caseloads going down per se. It's the cost per case that is lower. And I'll go into
with the Southern Safety Net, which ran up a lot, safety net families last year, has kind of topped out this year around 1 or 2%.
Yeah, we'll go into that in more detail later. But so onto the next page, page four, miscellaneous budget, which is where all the economically driven revenues are budgeted, as well as the fringe benefits and other expenses that don't flow directly into a specific department. We have sales tax. This is the gross number. If we look at just the net number, it's $5.4 million above what was forecasted. We're up 7.6% year-to-date. Actually, that includes July's number. We are holding our forecast for the rest of the year at 4.4%. As you obviously read in the press and elsewhere, the economic data, I don't believe, supports that we continue at that 7.6%. Now, I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but with the revisions to GDP, with the jobs numbers, et cetera, I think it's prudent to keep it at 4.4, which would lead us to an $8 million gross number above budget for sales tax and a net to the county of 5.4 after you account for the 21.7% that we pass on to the municipalities. On mortgage tax, we expect to come in below budget. That's based on where we're seeing the collections year to date. Obviously, the sales of existing homes number, which was to be expected to go down in July versus June just because of the tax credit expiring. I think, you know, it just came in a little bit lower than what people were anticipating it was going to be. One of the bright spots, though, in terms of the real estate market in the county is that we're seeing, if you actually look at Westchester's existing home sales in July versus July of last year, we were only one of two counties that actually showed an increase. And I think a lot of that is due to the $1 million and up homes are starting to move. I mean, people hold it at a certain price, and then once one moves, then that sort of sets the bar for everyone else. And I think that's also skewing the median price up once we see the higher priced homes selling. Pilot payments, we're looking at $400,000 above budget. That's due to several new pilot payments coming online. In terms of the expenditure side, health benefits, I touched on this, we're looking at, because of our trending lower than what was assumed in the budget, about $4.5 million in savings we're projecting for this year versus budget. Other fringe, $1 million would be due to the vacancies. Tax certs, we're projecting to be $8.6 million higher than budget. We are actually year-to-date up 74% on tax certs, and that's largely driven by commercial properties. The commercial real estate market, as you know, lags the residential market in terms of the downturn, and these appeals take time to wind their way through the system. And you can't really account for it for one or two, you know, large appeals of a million or so. I mean, it's a lot of appeals and larger appeals just because of the you know, with vacancies in commercial real estate, that obviously drives the comps, which drives the appraisals. So we're seeing that. And so we bumped that up to a number which I think 9.4 million was what was projected in the budget to about 18 million this year based on, we're almost at that budget number so far year to date. And then, so going into the largest department, obviously, which accounts for almost half of the tax levy is social services after accounting for the state and federal aid. We're looking at social services on a net basis with respect to the tax levy being $9.8 million below budget. This is after subtracting out the 15.7 IGT, which shows up in the revenue on the expense side, or miscellaneous revenue on the expense side. Expenses are expected to be $15.8 million below budget. $1 million is due to the salaries of savings from vacancies, $500,000 in contractual services, and $13 million in the relief. And these are all the various areas below. Pretty much across the board, we're seeing numbers below budget. And, you know, I think that family assistance, we're looking at $1.4 million below. Safety net, we're looking at $4.3 million. Child welfare, which is foster care, $4 million below budget. Daycare, in the three areas, low-income scholarships and Title 20 below budget, emergency assistance to families below, emergency assistance to adults slightly below budget, and contractual savings of $400,000. And on the revenue side, it's expected to be $6 million below budget due to the lower state aid resulting from the lower expenditures. And then looking at caseloads, as you can see, just generally looking at these numbers, you can see the homeless numbers. I included in here, this is the average monthly caseload. You can see for 2009 versus 2010, homeless was trending down. That trend continues into 2010. You can see on the non-homeless, slight increase in the family assistance, decrease on safety net, an increase in safety net singles, and on the daycare, low income, slight increase, Title 20, a reduction in caseloads, and then child welfare, again, a reduction in caseloads. And the next page shows it from a dollar perspective. And you can see in most cases, we're looking at savings in almost every area, with the exception of safety net singles in terms of the non-homeless. And I think that's because of a conscious effort to reduce the homeless population and keep them, you know, in their homes. I think, and of course, daycare, we're looking at savings there, and then child welfare as well. And again, I think when the budget is done, there may be, you know, because there's such variability in social services, and that's the biggest area of the budget, you know, there may be a slight cushion.
And to that point, you know, I really, really would like a lot more detail, mm-hmm. and coming from a social work perspective, because everything that's being presented here, and I agree that I wasn't going to ask questions, this is a statement. This doesn't sizzle with what is happening with the economy out there. What you're showing us here, it's totally against the numbers.
Yeah.
This is like we're putting guns to people's heads to come up with these numbers, but this is not the reality. So I really, at some point, want some detail. And the first forecast, you gave us this much detail. And now we're getting how many pages? 9. And this is not directly to you, Mr. Salt, but honestly, I live in the real world. I see what's going on out there. Caseloads are not realistically going down. We're just looking at the numbers, and I keep repeating this at this table. At some point, something's got to give, because guess what? I get feedback. I'm the only social work legislator sitting. I happen to be the budget chairman this time around. But these numbers don't go in line with what is really happening with the economy out there. And I'm pretty annoyed. So at some point, I want somebody that really does the hands-on. And if not, I am going to ask for individual sub-departments in DSS to come and report to me how they're getting by with caseloads of 250 units per person, which is really what is happening out there. And I know you're the messenger, Mr. Soul, but it really pains me to see numbers, especially in DSS. We deal with people. We don't deal with numbers. So anyway, continue, but at some point, I want some nitty-gritty to these numbers, because with this economy and with the way things are out there, and with the steps that we took to make sure that we were not caught by surprise with the economy turned the way it has, this doesn't make sense. But anyway, that's my message, and I'll do whatever I have to do from this end to get the proper answers to the people of Westchester.
Okay.
Because this is just numbers.
I understand.
It doesn't rhyme.
You know, from my perspective, it's not just about numbers. There's policy decisions that go behind these numbers.
Exactly.
And I understand that. I appreciate that.
We're dealing with people.
I fully appreciate that.
Okay.
And in my defense, if I may, I gave a lot of information to your staff, to Ann, Olivia, and to Bob. And I would think it's their responsibility to pass it on to you. I'm happy to provide you whatever detail you need. I gave them that detailed report. I thought for ease of presentation purposes, I would boil it down to what I felt was, you know, a summary level. And then certainly, I mean, this is a much longer discussion. Obviously, social services has many different programs, and I think it's best that the commissioner or acting commissioner, you know, speak to that. And I don't want you to feel that I'm insensitive at all. I'm just, again, as you said, I'm reporting the numbers here, and this is what we're projecting at this point. And I don't think across, if you look at the caseloads, we're not projecting, you know, them to go down significantly. I think a lot of it's in the homeless area, to be honest with you. And I think when they do the budget, I mean, there's some cushion built into the actual dollar amounts, you know, to cover potential increases. So,
Mr. Chairman, just on this chart, what is this data up till?
This is up through the end of June.
To the June?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I mean, the caseloads are going up, except for the safety net families, which went up like 14% 2009-2008. This year is flattening out. Those are the people who've been on longer than 5 years. Maybe it goes back to the last recession. Maybe they bumped up in 2009. We're not seeing it in 2010. The only one caseload that's really going down a lot is the child welfare, which you know is like 900 plus. And then after 6 months, it's been coming down. And now it's running around 800. And that's, I guess, getting the kids back into the families faster, you know, removing impediments, whatever, to bring the kids back, or if the decision is to make, put into foster care, or, you know, whatever. The numbers are coming down. And that's where a lot of the savings, you have $4 million in savings in child welfare.
It's only until June, Mr. Chairman. It's only until, which our July 1st was when we had, when we had all the people leave. So in fairness to the numbers, in June, it was trending a certain way, and now we have 450 less people. So caseloads,
obviously. That is exactly the point that I'm making.
It's a snapshot that's a little early.
That we haven't got yet.
If I pick on a specific department, and I'm going to go with mandated, because it seems like anything that is not mandated is not necessary. But like I said at this table before, it is because of those agencies that do what they do that we manage to keep things in hold from what is mandated. And at some point, I really want a true count of caseload per person and whether things are really getting done out there with the cuts that Chairman Jenkins is highlighting, because I can't wait for the end of September report. I will want some detail. And then we're diving into the budget. And you know what? I want direct answers. And I want it from the people that are doing it day in and day out, not just numbers. And I know you're reporting on the numbers, and Chairman Jenkins makes a good point. This was pre-exodus, if you will, and what are we doing moving forward?
And fair enough. I understand. And again, the department can best speak to those. I can't profess to be an expert on all these programs. And I think one of the things we have to be careful of, these, again, as you said, these are six-month numbers at this point. A lot can change between now and the end of the year. And I think we also have to look at, you know, if unemployment benefits expire, you know, what happens at the end of that if they don't get extended again. I mean, I think that's a big driver of a lot of the services that we may need to provide. And there may be people on the edge that, you know, are on unemployment now that could, you know, in turn become our clients if that happens. So going in.
Make a comment? Just so I can better understand this. These numbers are actually based on what was projected last year. So if the numbers were somewhat inflated last year, obviously there's going to be a decrease. So while it might not be a true snapshot, I think it's more realistic in terms of, you know, a comparative analysis versus what was projected and what is reality. So while they might not be coming down dramatically, they're coming down from what was projected prior year.
Yeah, but what you need to understand, they're including here something that is called modified budget, which didn't exist and this board didn't approve. Coming the end of last year. So that's a tweak in there that the administration brought in based on what they want to see, you know?
Okay.
And we approved the budget to be invested in Westchester, that it hasn't moved forward in the way that we anticipated. So those are all of the concerns. But right now, I'll have a fiscal director for a comment.
Just a comment on the information that's presented to the legislators. Historically, the fiscal staff here is with the budget department, and we go over in a great deal of detail what's behind the forecast. Typically, a summary is presented to the legislators. Our copy is stamped draft confidential, so the expectation was that we were going to, the same information would be presented to the legislators as was presented in the first quarter forecast, which is why we didn't copy our sheets to share with them. Again, they're stamped draft confidential, so we respected that.
And I made copies of the you know, the normal sheets that are handed out, and I'm happy to hand those out as well.
Mm-hmm. Please.
And then going to the point that was just made, I think if we look at the caseloads are actually budgeted numbers. We don't change those in the modified budget, from what I understand. And if you look at the increases in the budget, I mean, family assistance, non-homeless, 11% increase. Safety net families, 2%. I'm sorry, page 5, I apologize. So those are all projected to increase in the budget. So again, I think that's a fair point, is that, you know, the reductions are versus budget, which did have a large increase projected for caseloads, and that was based off of, you know, and then you can also see it versus the budget versus 2009. That's why I put this in here, so you could see, you know, that the budget did anticipate a large increase.
For instance, family assistance, not homeless. We're going up, we're projecting to be 11%, and that's what we're running for 6 months, or 2009. We're going to be 3% of the budget, but
looking at page,
the budget
page
is
five.
For an increase, but we're going to be higher.
Document you just passed out.
No, yeah. The original.
Right here. Okay.
And again, since DSS happens to be the biggest driver of this, okay. At some point, I really want to look at efficiencies. Listen, nobody likes more efficiencies than me. I've been challenging the system for the longest time. But when we had a work at doing 100 cases in a particular department, and every department is different, and then we're going to have 200, you're going to have to justify this, not just on the numbers, but on the human side of it. And that's what I'm talking about, people. So that it doesn't catch anybody by surprise, that's what I want to see. If you're going to tell me that one individual human being is going to be doing two people's work, I want to see how. Otherwise, you know, this is my message to the administration. Let's get it right. We're in the human services business. And that's my message. This is all.
Okay, going on to page 7 of the initial presentation. Department of Corrections is the next area where we're seeing, and I should clarify this, saving versus plan. This is a year-over-year savings. So we're looking at 4.3 million below plan in terms of our projection. A lot of this is due to this, driven by the census, which is running around average of 1371 year to date versus budget of 1480. I think there's a point where the census goes above a certain level, and that requires additional overtime when prisoners are in the annex, which requires additional correction officers given the configuration of that particular section. So again, it's overtime. Salary savings, close to $2 million. There's a revenue due to the federal inmate population. There were several gang raids, so our federal inmate population has increased. That may not be something that will be the case next year. I think we have to keep that in mind when we're working on the budget.
We even popped it up a little bit based on the...
Yeah. So there's additional federal revenue above and beyond what was budgeted, and there's other savings in other areas, you know, Aramark contract for meals, et cetera, as a result of the lower census. So all of that totals about 4.3 million below plan. Department of Health, we're looking at 3.2 million below plan. A million of that is salary savings due to vacancies in the public health division. Children with special needs is below plan by 4.3 million in terms of our forecast. A lot of this is driven by actions of the state, not by actions that the county has taken in terms of the application process. And there's fewer authorizations. SEIT is down $1 million. Demand is down, as well as fewer authorizations. Preschool programs, related services is down $1.8 million. The state education department is no longer reimbursing for annual review and consultation meetings. Therefore, we're seeing, you know, savings there. Transportation down $500,000. due to active monitoring of the routes and being more efficient in terms of transporting children. School age maintenance down $500,000. We have a decrease. This is an offset to some of these savings of $800,000 or $0.8 million versus what was budgeted, and a decrease in revenue related to the lower children with special needs expenditures. $1.8 million is offsetting the expenditure savings because we get lower reimbursement.
Question, Mr. Chair.
We're going to wait.
All right. Department of Public Works, we're looking at a $2.1 million versus budget savings, annual regular, hourly, and overtime savings of about $846,000, utility savings of $900,000. Our NYPA rates are coming in lower than expected. Therefore, we're looking at savings in the area of utilities. Other expenditure savings of $650,000 covered include contractual services, repairs, and maintenance expenses. And we do have a $260,000 loss in terms of interdepartmental charges. Again, that's going to be reflected in other departments' budgets. Labs and research, one of the few departments where we're looking at a significant deficit versus budget of $3.2 million. This is all accounted for by lower projected revenues. And I will add to this that we did have a study done. It's in draft form right now on the environmental side to look at the fees and to see if there's an opportunity to increase those fees. We found a few opportunities to increase the fees, but nowhere near the amount of revenue that was originally anticipated. And I think that we could see some increased revenues there, but not to the level of $3 million. So I think, that's something we have to look at very, very closely. On the next page, Department of Probation, we're looking at close to $1 million below budget, $347,000 in salary savings versus budget, $165,000 in overtime, $231,000 from other expenses, including contractual services, and $176,000 in interdepartmentals. Parks and Recs, the other department where we're looking at a deficit versus budget of $1.6 million. A lot of that is made up due to lower than projected attendance at Playland, which accounted for about $3.1 million lower revenues. However, that's offset by higher revenues in other areas, the pool, the beach, the ice casino, and especially the golf courses have helped offset that loss somewhat. And there are salary savings due to vacancies and the early retirement. Department of Transportation, we're looking at $700,000 below the budgeted tax levy. Expenditures are down $1.4 million from budget. The areas below are listed. Bus operating assistance, $1 million. Fare box revenue is down 1.9, but that's offset by increased MetroCard revenue. And then offset by there's savings from bus route adjustments, $1.9 million. And then other cost-saving measures of $1 million that are being implemented by Liberty Airlines. Revenue is below budget by about $779,000. This is accounted for by the STOA, or State Transit Operating Assistance, the cut that the state made of $3.6 million, which is a $7.6 million reduction from what it was the prior year. We're looking at
$7.6 million.
Did I say million? I meant percent versus what it was the prior year. We're looking at some things that were unexpected, $1.2 million in additional preventative maintenance funds, which I guess the state provided to somewhat help offset the $3.6 million reduction. And that is offset by a reduced drawdown of 5307 funds of $1.2 million. Federal aid, we're looking at about $800,000 above budget. MetroCard revenue above budget by $1.5 million. And additional revenue from the airport of $94,000. And I think federal aid is additional our stimulus money, that was not anticipated in the budget. Public safety, we're looking at a 667 on the next page from 667,000 savings from budget. 742 is in annual regular, 100,000 in other personal services, and then the interdepartmental revenue is down by 223,000. We know that the medical center has eliminated contract, and I think there's savings in terms of the services that they provide to other departments. Department of Emergency Services, we're looking at $639,000 less than budget, savings in overtime, hourly, savings in other expenses, including contractual services of about $160,000, telecom data processing, and then equipment and general supplies. So I mean, I guess just to, you know, I'll open it up to questions, but just to kind of sum it up, I mean, some of the risks I see in the budget are, as you pointed out, social services caseload. This is a six-month number that can change dramatically. Obviously, over the next 6 months, sales tax. I think, you know, there's certainly mixed economic news on that, and so I think to keep it at 4.4, which was the budgeted number in terms of growth, makes sense. We have to keep a close eye on tax certs. And I think we have to keep a close eye on overtime, obviously, with fewer employees and with the number of vacancies we have now, we have to keep a close eye that overtime doesn't shoot above budget, because right now we're looking at a projection below budget. So those are just some of the comments.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Zoll. Listen, remember, if you match the detail on the last handout, you may answer your own question, but right now, based on, and Mr. Williams, I added you to the list.
Okay.
For question, I have Mr. Jenkins, Mr. Ryan, and Mr. Williams for specific questions. But please remember, you have additional detail if you want to match the question to a specific number on the forecast. Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry, thanks so much on this. I know that there was a few things that you asked for, Mr. Chairman, when we got the first quarter forecast. It looks like those things were, you know, in the process of being ironed out. It's trying to get a report that was more consistent with the way that we were looking at it before, and I appreciate the work that, you know, through your committee, Mr. Chairman, and certainly and your staff and budget working together on this particular thing. I did just want to comment on the point that was raised that our Director of Fiscal Affairs raised, is that there's certainly a conversation line that happens between the budget department and our fiscal staff, and certainly there's an expectation that some of those things are not going to flow out into the street until you all present them. So it sounded to me like they were trying to make sure to respect that process, as opposed to distributing something before you were ready for it to be seen. The things that
specific... Getting to that point, Mr. Jenkins, they are the ones that manage the detail. And yes, I get the highlights, and that's what we discuss here. I really, the point that I'm making is that this county has great human services.
Absolutely.
And if we're going to move in a different direction, at some point, the administration needs to call it what it is, you know, if we're going to change that. Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right. From the tax search perspective, if we could, Mr. Chairman, get the detail to support the search, the backup data for the certifications. We know that we're going through that collaborative assessment process that the board approved last year, and they're trying to get towards I think they're doing the photography in the fall. That was pushed back not because of any reason other than bad weather, right? I mean, you know, there was things that they just couldn't make happen. But that would absolutely help us with that. I know that additionally there's a recommendation that's going through Mr. Burton's committee as far as the centralized commercial assessment database item, which will help us get a better handle and control over this particular number. So we have some better expectations of what revenue that we have going in, and that we're not spending money that we...
Do you know, are the governments doing something that would be making more work come through faster? Is that what you're saying, or that they're doing a database or something? Because it's really spiked up a lot.
Correct. What happens is, well, in our current environment, everyone and their mother decided that they were going to have an article to determine how you could save money in your taxes by challenging your taxes. So everyone is doing it now, because so instead of us having, you know, whatever process that needs to be done, whether it's data gathering and, you know, updating assessment data or a reval, whatever those are, that's happening one property at a time, and municipalities are just going, you know, getting beat the heck out of it. And businesses that certainly have high-priced attorneys that have nothing else to do but to find every dime they could find, that's where we get hit with the really big ones. But now we have individual homeowners challenging their assessments. So we've been working with them on this. It was a bipartisan effort to put this thing together, and we expect to see some good fruition with that result. So the municipalities are working with the county. They have a commission that was set up. We are part of that with Mr. Jackson, and they have a set of recommendations on assessment, the centralized assessment database, which will help the local municipalities manage that commercial bit better, as well as giving them the data to update their own individual systems so that they can have a better number, and we won't be able to say antebellum anymore, right? Which is the last time they assessed in Mount Vernon, which was pre-Civil War.
Okay.
right? Antebellum, right? So, right? So, anyway, all right. Mr. Chairman, going down the list, especially in social services, you know we have had a tremendous concern about some items that were modified in social services, and if we're $9.8 million below the expected budget at this point in time in June, it even is a bigger concern for us on the board why we made any modifications to things that we wanted to invest in that would certainly contribute to that 9.8 number. But if we took out that million and a half number, then we'd still be, at a significant savings in the department based on the investments that were made. And that was one of the points that that the chairman was making as far as the individual investments that were made in discretionary, or someone might say discretionary services, that cost us far less money. Discretionary services like putting money into attorneys to make sure that people stay in their houses and they don't get evicted, and for eviction prevention and for homelessness prevention, for one-time rental assistance and all those things, and all those foreclosure assistance that the board invested in to help us keep those numbers down. So, one day that'll get recognized on the chart, Mr. Chairman. I know that that might be a pipe dream, but maybe it'll get recognized because that helps us save money. And at the end, thank you for giving us the data to say that it was up to June, because it might give a skewed picture, because people look at us and say we're at the end of, we're getting ready to be in September, and they think that this is the snapshot now. And it's not. It's actually 3 months behind. The things that we would need to see, an additional, if we could get this, Mr. Chairman, from the Public Works Department, there's a utility savings of $900,000. I know that we have our solar project, to see if that's in contributing in that in any way, shape, or form. Hopefully it is. I'm sorry, I'm just going back to the sales tax projections, which is up significantly. It's a good clip that we're running at, and certainly it's fair to be more conservative. But as you mentioned in the budget, we conservatively estimated it when we created this budget. So that's part of the reason. So if things work at this continued basis, then we're going to be in pretty good shape from our sales tax revenue perspective. So, I just want to make sure that we're mentioning, Mr. Chairman, through you, Mr. Chairman, that we're not just doing one side of the equation and saying that the expenses are, projected bad, but the revenue is going to be the same, right? I know you're not Mr. Soul. You've done a great job of presenting the numbers. You got to call them as you see them, right? And that's the And every once in a while, it'll just be an outside ball, and then somebody will get thrown out the game, right? That's my Manny Ramirez reference for his strike last night. All right, someone would know that. Hey, so we need to do that. The last two things are, one is that I noted in the Department of Transportation that the 5307 was not drawn down by $1.2 million from the state to help offset the cut that they made. But we still have, Mr. Chairman, I know that you've sent many negative letters, like phone calls, emails, I don't know what else we could do other than saying, I know Commissioner Soule, Director Soule sent up the transfer for 5307 for $1.5 million, which was budgeted by this board when we enacted the budget last year for $1.5 million. I'm not sure why that transfer still hasn't happened, other than somebody just being just completely obstinate, recalcitrant, just I don't feel like doing it. But the reality is that $1.5 million transfer needs to get done, because that would only assist in that bottom line number, if I recall correctly, of $22 million, of which you're projecting so far. But that transfer went up, I guess, in February or March?
March, I think.
March? All right, March, the 5307 transfer. It was 5307, the transfer went up in March, right? Okay, and that certainly is a good thing. I also note that the revenue for the MetroCard revenue is above budget by $1.5 million, and that's before all the changes that we did for the Express Bus line, which will be the only line in the complete service that is actually doing a good thing from a bottom line perspective. Right, the rest of the service returns 35% of its cost. Right, I'm not sure why we picked one line to do that, but that'll be a budget discussion later on. And last point, Mr. Chairman, is on public safety and DES. I do note that in our June projection that we projected in public safety a $667,000 savings from budget, and then we are also projecting a $639,000 savings from emergency services. I'm going to go $1.8 million savings in this particular work without doing any of the drama of consolidation, which is going to save approximately $350,000 a year for this. The two departments alone are doing great.
In
11, I thought it was $700,000 saving in 2011, right? That was projected. $700,000 savings. The reason I reduced it was because $350,000 that is grant money, so that's not real savings, right? You can say savings for tax levy, but, you know, it's not savings as far as the cost of the department. So with this kind of information in front of us, there would be a significant question that, you know, through you, Mr. Chairman, will we get the details of the numbers that when we get to public safety in September to talk about the proposed consolidation of these two departments? Why would we even be talking about this when the departments seem to be doing pretty darn well by themselves as far as doing great work and trying to shave dollars off the budget? So other than trying to just sound like we're feeling good by saying we're consolidating something. Last point, Mr. Chairman, on the Playland numbers, we need to get that broken out a little bit better. You know, it says, you know, we're going $3.1 million. I don't know what that includes. What it seems to include on a normal basis is the whole cost of Playland, the pool, the pool, the maintenance, the boardwalk, whatever things that we have all go into the cost and then get budgeted against Playland revenue. And then the breakout of the golf beach and ice casino revenue up. That the numbers don't seem to make sense. I know that our Parks Department, our Parks Board Representative, Mr. Harkham, who has not officially been appointed as of yet, but he has been there because it has to come down from the county executive. But he reported that at the last Parks Board meeting that the revenue was up while the attendance was down. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that we have broken out the numbers for Playland to have the amusement park have a zero tax levy number. I'm not sure what those numbers are, so if we can get those breakouts, that would be extremely helpful. And also, while we're thinking about that, since it's coming from budget, we might ask for Playland, because there's some assertion out there that at one point in time, Playland was profitable, right? So I think that if someone could show us a number that said what year that was when Playland was a profit center, because I don't believe it ever was, right? You know, maybe back in the 30s sometime.
I think it was 1928 1931.
Well, when we first bought it, and we paid off the debt service for it in 3 years and then started buying parks with the money for Playland. Yeah. But yeah, that would be helpful in our discussion, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the thanks.
And which park is losing more money than Playland?
That'll be our 11 o'clock one. That, so which park out there in the current economic environment is making money at all? Any of them? Since I guess two of them went in bankruptcy over the last year, so including Six Flags.
Mr. Jenkins, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Larry, obviously appreciate you being here today. Just in support of Mr. Alvarado's point, we know that their report is going to have some interesting things relative to a lot of county functions, both mandated and discretionary. But in the area of social services, just kind of look at the numbers, it's almost, looking at what we see here, it's almost counterintuitive. Numbers that are presented and what you would expect in a large suburban county like Westchester. The recession obviously ran much longer and deeper than we all thought. The recovery is a very slow one. Our core mission as a county is to take care of the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that need the help of government for very essential things, food and shelter and health care and the like. And we know that those numbers would likely increase during tough economic times. And so I think the thing that kind of strikes me is a presentation that shows that the one department where we accept, and part of our educating the community involves pointing out to them that if there is any government, like business can expand and retract in response to changing economic conditions, county government doesn't have that luxury. When the economy goes bad, it's game time for county government. And we have to kick in, and a lot of what we do in the social service area is expensive, and more people needing our assistance means more activity, driving up more costs. And so you'd think over a long period of time, a county like Westchester would be actually spending more, at least pressured to spend more. So I understand what the chairman is saying, and I too, not so much to Larry, but to the Department of Social Services and their analysts, we're going to need some more information to try to understand better what exactly is going on within the department as it responds to the people in Westchester that are in need. And once again, that's not a few dozen, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of people. With respect to the topic of Playland and its finances, I just would like to give a word of encouragement to our fiscal people, to your office, Larry, as well. One of the a major part of the work plan of the committee which I chair has been laid out to look in depth at Playland. We had somewhat, as a committee, we had somewhat targeted the latter part of the season to begin that review. And in anticipation of that, well beyond what is presented when we do our budget in December and we look at cost center numbers that are on page such and such of the executive's recommended budget proposal, I made a request for a Playland cost center budget that is in much greater detail than that. I don't know what we're going to need to drill down to, but I know that for starters, both Public Works and Budget will need something that goes far beyond what the legislators and the public usually see in early December when we sit down and talk about typically the Playland part of the Parks and Recreation budget. So sooner rather than later would be helpful to the legislators and specifically the Parks Committee that has made that request to see those numbers. We need it as a tool as we start to look at the substantive issues that involve Playland and in particular its use and as a park and the use that we put it to and how that facility is managed. So that's just a word of encouragement to those who are working on those numbers for the committee. Let me focus in on one area in particular. Labs and research showing a deficit of $3.2 million. Lower revenues versus what was projected in the 2010 budget. At the time, one of the big issues that was discussed between the board and the prior administration was the question of adding revenues and to what degree could those revenues be increased. And there was a final decision made by the board with concurrence by the administration that we would add a number knowing that there was a backup. And the backup was that if the number wasn't materializing as we got deeper into the year, there were items that we could then start to look at to offset the shortage in the revenue number. So I guess the question I have is, as we were on the doorstep of September, has the administration decided that the trending is such that we really need to start to look at what those items are and at what point might you be bringing down your thoughts to us, you and Labs and Resource and research, your thoughts to us for the very action that we discussed in December at the time the budget was passed to deal with labs and research revenue should, in fact, 2010 unfold in a way where we're not hitting that number. And right now, without going back into the paper, I guess it's we're about $3 million down.
$3 million.
Okay. All right. So just your thoughts on that. Obviously, you don't have that today to present to us. But.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely a department we have to look at closely. I mean, we do a lot of there's, you know, four different divisions there. I mean, we do the toxicology testing, you know, for all the, for the DA, for public safety, for the municipalities. And, you know, the problem is if you look at, you know, say, just as an example, I'm not saying this is what's being considered, but eliminating that department, then the DA, then the public safety and the municipalities have to go out and procure that. And you look at the amount of revenue that you're going to lose, you know, the savings may not be worth it. You know, looking at something like that, and I think you have to look at the public health and safety aspect of it too. You don't want to do something that, you know, would threaten public health or safety. I mean, they do like 6,000 TB tests a year. Yeah. I think, you know, so you have to look at it very carefully in terms of short-term savings. I don't, you know, there's some opportunity to raise the fees, but a lot of what they do, I mean, for health, for instance, they don't charge, you know, department. I mean, even though that would just be an interdepartmental, anyways. You know, I think we have to look at how they're managing their operations. I mean, do they need to have as many grade 13s supervising as they have? You know, I think a lot of them serve as expert witnesses when they go to court, and to have consistency there is a benefit rather than if you go to a private lab, you know, you could have a different person going to. So there's a lot of different aspects to look at it, but do I think they can operate more efficiently? Sure, I think they can, and I think we really need to delve down below the surface and figure out how to do that. And, you know, you also have the civil service and union rules, too, in terms of outsourcing, which we learned from IT, so we have to be careful about those issues as well. So, you know, but again, I think we're looking at it very carefully.
I appreciate that. Just to put it into a context, personally, as a legislator, I understand the importance of labs and research, and I think that over in recent years, I believe the majority of this board, although it has been an issue from time to time, understand how important, how essential that particular function is. And that's in the context of the needs of Westchester, and also to the extent that we handle needs for those functions that come from outside of Westchester County. I think the only point I want to make is that the legislature understood that the revenue number might not be achievable. And at the time, there were items that were looked at as items that might have to be looked at in a much more closer way later in the year, later in 2010, might help with the fact that the revenue numbers were not going to be achieved. So my only question this morning was, does the administration feel it's there yet? And not to frame it in a question, but just a suggestion. If you do, and you're ready, probably we'd be very interested in hearing what your thought process is at that point.
And sure. To your
Judy.
Just to your point, I also believe there was some research going on with regards to the medical center working more closely with labs and research,
yeah,
perhaps as a, yeah. Do you have an update on any of that, or does the administration, can they talk to, I know that discussions had been going on, there had been some consulting services in there looking at things.
Larry, the medical center, as Judy points out, the medical center saw a tremendous value. Why run a parallel duplicative operation if labs and research just does the job so well? Why not look for the possibility?
If you could get back to us on where
sure.
we stand with all of that, I think it would be, and especially if we could do it before we meet with them in the joint review committee, which
absolutely.
Is next
Monday, the 8th, Wednesday.
The 8th, Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be helpful, just to know where we stand with all of that.
Sure.
While you were out,
just wanted to ask Bill a question. When the end of last year came and we were here, and I think Marty and I were very upset with all the money that they were going to put into labs and research so that we don't have the place in Albany, we don't have to go there, we should have it here. And no other person in place in this county wanted to chip in. They wanted to use it because it was convenient, but nobody wanted to help Westchester County out with it. And that was
Never did that. That was the molecular diagnostic lab.
Yeah,
we never did go there, though.
Right. But anything that we do to help the rest of, you know, the counties around us, they should chip in.
That's a good point.
I think that the greatest level point is Salmonella today, H1N1, potential pandemics, and so on and so forth. And we're just not ready at all. You know, it will take a couple of months to find out what the heck is wrong with us. But be that as it may. Mr. Wood.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that I joined late, and I don't want to repeat all the questions that have been answered, but just as a matter of recap, I just wanted to get directly from the budget director just my understanding. If you can turn to page 3 of the document, just to get a brief kind of overall picture by asking a few questions. You're showing for the, this is second quarter, right, that you're presenting? Second quarter
forecast. For the entire year, through the end of June.
Right, the second quarter forecast for the 2010 budget, relating to the 2010 budget,
correct,
shows a positive variance or a surplus from the budget, a purchase of $22.3 million. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Of which total expenditures are $30.7 million below what was budgeted.
Correct.
Right? And that is offset by revenue shortfalls of $8.3 million. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So that I get that, I want to make sure I'm reading these numbers correctly. Now, just to go back to the $30.7 million budget positive variance or surplus in expenditures.
Yes.
You're showing a surplus relating to social services relief of $13.1 million. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, and if we were to turn now to the page that addresses that, I think page 4 is that? Is that
page 4, yeah.
Okay. And how do I get, I see you show 9.8 of a positive, is it 9.8 less, how do I get to the 13.1 from page 4? This is just, I mean, people might have understood this. I don't have this.
No, no, he has specifically explained that. He took the idea.
All right, I'm trying to get.
Well, I don't know if you're looking at the other group. You're not looking at the other report.
No, I'm trying to get to this 13.1 relief.
13.2.
13.133.
It's 13.1.
Right?
Yeah. Right, no, you're right.
On the expenditure side.
Right.
Right, and there's obviously an offsetting.
Oh, there's an offset.
Offset because we lose state and federal aid for, you know, if we have lower expenditures. I show down below a $6 okay. million dollar offset in terms of the revenue side of the equation.
Okay. So let me understand it so that I... Okay. So you're saying that because we have reduced expenditures, we lose federal and state aid?
Correct.
Okay. Now, to what extent do you project that we lose federal and state aid from this relief?
Well, it depends on the program. I mean, obviously, some are...
No, but I'm talking globally.
If we were to look at it on average, I'd say on average, it's around 70%. Every dollar that we spend in DSS is 70 cents of state and federal aid.
So every dollar, just to make sure I get it, every dollar we spend out of county levy 30 cents, and the federal and state governments spend 70 cents. Is that right?
It does depend on the program. That's
administration,
but
no, overall,
there's
overall.
Some that are 100% county.
Yeah, some of them are 100% county, right?
Right.
But I'm saying on an average, we're taking the winners and losers, basically, the ones that are 100%, the ones that are below 50. If you were to average them all out, you believe that it would be like a 70-30 split.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Now,
I mean, right now, safety net is 50-50, and that's where we're seeing a lot of savings, so
right.
We're actually getting about 50%
okay. from The other question, staying with that 70-30 or number, the other question relate to a question that when I walk in, I heard, I don't know if there was discussion before, and I'm not trying to repeat that, but I'm trying to get to my own edification. Is there any economic measurable factor as to the impacts when we decide to reject the program? There are two impacts. One, there's a financial impact. Let's say in a program we cost, let's say $10,000, $7,000 impact, the federal government don't give us, $33,000 we don't spend. Okay, on that $10,000 program, have you assessed the impact with respect to the county that are non-financial, that are not directly financial, because there are other financial impacts that are not measurable in this budget, but the impacts that are non-financial. I'll give you an example. Let's say child care. Okay, assuming that the program I'm talking about was child care, $10,000, assuming that it was the same 730 split, right?
But that's not.
But it's
it
not.
Is not. But
so it's not.
Okay, pick another program. Whatever program you want, just pick it, and we'll. But what I'm trying to say as an example is that have you measured the impacts to those programs, both economically in the county, that are not directly related to the county's budget, and from a service perspective?
The answer is no. We have not looked at, you know, what the ancillary
collateral effects, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I was advised when this report began.
I understand, Ms. John. I understand. I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to get it clear from my perspective. I know that they might. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to make this so that it's not a long-winded discussion. That's why I'm asking you direct questions rather than open-ended questions. Just a few others on that same point, because I'm not going to get anywhere else in the budget other than this for now. You said the programs that you eliminated that are counted as savings are the ones that are below this or below the 13.2 that has the bullet points to them?
Yeah, I would be careful to characterize it as eliminating programs, because I think a lot of this is as it relates to, if you look at the next page, almost every area was budgeted to be an increase over 2009. So any savings, again, is versus the increase that was budgeted. Even the projected numbers, if you look at the caseloads, are projected to still be above where they were in 2009, and that's largely due to economic conditions. So I think we're still projecting caseloads to be above where they were in 2009. But let's just say, you know, this is an inexact science for forecasting these numbers, and obviously we're looking at potential savings versus what was projected originally.
But okay, let's take an example then of what you just mentioned, just to test it out.
Sure.
Right. Let's stay with the low-income daycare. How is that above what is projected?
That is, okay, I shouldn't say all, but there's one, you know, low-income daycare, let's see, low-income is projected at 7%. No, those numbers are actually, if I'm looking at it correctly, low-income daycare is projected to be higher than what it was last year. 7% versus 2009 in our forecast.
Right. Have you taken into account that some of the programs are no longer existing, so therefore any potential new entrance into the program would not be?
Yes, absolutely. If that were to be the case, if a program were to be eliminated, certainly we would take that into account. Yes.
Okay, so if you did take it into account, then your actual 2009 amounts, have you reflected in that? Have you rolled out of those numbers as if that program was not in place in 2009, therefore there would not have been any new entrants?
If I understand the question correctly, I would say yes.
You did?
Yeah. I mean,
okay, do you have the data that supports that? To back up these numbers?
I don't know,
George.
Can we get
that?
What do you think about low-income daycare?
Title 20 and those, yeah.
Yeah, well, we have their forecast, what they're forecasting the trend.
No, but my question, just to make sure you understood my question was this. My first question was, have you considered in projecting that it is over forecast? You're saying that it was over budgeted, right? Or you're forecasting that it will be hit budget, or at least over budget, right?
Correct.
The number of entrants. Number of people who are participating.
We're projecting that the participants, but if you look at the dollar amount, there's actually savings.
I understand the savings, but
we're actually going to serve more people than we budgeted, but because of rentless share going up, it'll cost us less. So.
Right. I mean, that was the premise that I started with when I asked whether you had effects, and you said that wasn't measurable. Then you turned to this page and said, however, we're serving.
I didn't say what.
We didn't mean ancillary, like, I don't
said
know.
It wasn't measurable.
People that aren't on public assistance.
Mr. William, I specifically mentioned that I want this detail coming from the people that are
there. All right, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that the questions that I have are answered in the detail that you're requesting.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, but I postponed those questions to get the answers directly from the department, okay. Because and I highlighted, you know, not nicely, that we are in the human services and these numbers don't represent what is actually happening out there.
And I do respect that, Mr. Chairman, and I understand, but what one of the concerns I really have, and I probably have it, is a general concern, is that there are a number of generalizations that are made. I'm not a generalization person. I try to get to details. And oftentimes, we end up just dealing with generalizations, so it's hard to solve problems. But I'm going to yield, but I'd like to have these questions, as you said,
yes.
If they can be directed in more detail,
yes.
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks so much for yielding. Mr. O'Gash.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. Just a few questions on going back earlier on this one. We talked about your the savings in health insurance area. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, the savings come from POMCO either rejecting, you know, doing a better or worse, rejecting claim, you know, saving money on their management style, or is it simply a healthier population?
Well, I think it's a combination. I don't think it's the first thing you said. I don't think it's the case that they're, you know, outright rejecting claims just to save money. I mean, I think that there is, we have active disease management. You know, we had CareGuide that was bought out by a larger national company now that's actively managing, you know, doing disease management. Perhaps some of those cases that could become late-stage renal or, you know, I can't, you know, or... We're seeing fewer catastrophic cases, let's put it that way. At this point last year, maybe we had like 11 cases that were costing us over $200,000. Now we have 4. And that Ponco doesn't really, you know, no one really knows the answer. I mean, it could be partly just random, but it could also be, I mean, we are taking, or Ponco is taking active steps to manage these cases. And I think... part of it is we're seeing utilization down across the board, inpatient, outpatient. We have maybe a trend of, let's say, like 8% in the budget. We're looking at maybe closer to 6% trend, which is still lower than what the average is. I mean, if you look at out there, the average inflation rate for medical is much higher than that. So I think there's got to be something to be said about, you know, what we're actively doing. I mean, can we directly measure that? It's very difficult to say that it's a direct correlation.
We have a subcommittee that frankly put out a statement a little earlier that sort of because of the review of the subcommittee, we're saving $6 million. So I was wondering if POMCO was reacting to their work and you know, doing something, or just a healthier population. I was trying to figure out what the results of the savings is.
We can respond.
Yeah, okay, I was just curious, because that's, anyway, so, okay, but I thought maybe POMCO was responding to your work and
POMCO made a presentation to us.
Cut back, but Larry's saying we don't really know if POMCO is just spending our money less, or population's healthier.
I think the catastrophic cases clearly show that
that's
the population's healthier.
Okay,
that is the
case. People are healthier. Unfortunately, some people are dying, and other people are moving from our cost to Medicaid. I get them confused. All right. When those Medi things, right? They've moved from those, and it's not they're not our cost anymore. But I think the point that was being raised was that because of the additional scrutiny that was requested by the subcommittee, and joint, the administration worked with us on this particular thing to make sure that there wasn't a trigger being pulled on a specific action, right? That we turned around, that we saved, I guess, $4.5 million, and we didn't do anything. I mean, you know, it just was the work that the people were doing, as opposed to making a reaction to joining a different organization, which was denyship at the time.
And if I may just piggyback on that, as a co-chair of the subcommittee, I think it is actually an example of one of the many benefits of being self-insured, is that we can directly look at what's happening within our insured population, and it's not skewed by what is happening on a larger scale. because we have, I mean, we're dealing with the raw data, basically.
Okay.
And when it goes up and down, we see it immediately, and it isn't skewed. And the, it's both good and bad when we see 14 people getting having renal failure and having to go into dialysis. We see it immediately. It's not offset by all the many. But on the other hand, being self-insured, when those 14 might get reduced to 4 for whatever reason, we see the benefit.
Okay.
The kind of stock is derived. It can be, you see, 24 million or 30 million.
I know. The prior administration was...
prevent people with high blood pressure.
But it is a...
They were projecting 30 on dialysis.
It's a benefit of self insurance.
All right. And again, I'm looking at all these numbers, and I can't tell if these are annualized or 6 months. All,
no, all the numbers here are annualized. Nope. I mean, we refer to it as a second quarter forecast, but it's really a 12-month number that's
updated
based on...
Right, so you're taking the second quarter, but at the end of the day, these you've annualized. This is where you plan to end up.
That's correct. Based on this. That's
okay.
Absolutely right.
Okay, because that's important to get started, because... Because a lot of the people, a lot of the retirees didn't go off till July 1st or later, right?
Yeah, we did.
So, in projecting those hundreds of people leaving the, I'm trying to understand.
But they already said that.
Yeah, we did.
So you jumped ahead, even though these are annualized in the second quarter.
I should say that some things we know, actuals for July. So if it was something drastically different, we took that into account. And that's kind of why we waited till now to present it, because we knew all these people were coming
on
payroll.
So
I should clarify that certain things, because we knew what it was.
Yeah. And I don't want to sort of repeat where Lindsay Williams was going, but there's a lot of discussion in the last couple months about, freezing Title 20 and raising co-pays and all that. So it could pick that with DSS. But those, you've taken all those projections of the higher co-pays and the freezing of Title 20, and that's all in your numbers, annualized out? That's annualized.
Well, I mean, the co-pays would have been enacted at the beginning of the year for the open enrollment. Obviously, if they go up next year...
Well, although the co-pays were
they
mid-year? Well, we raised one co-pay, but there was additional, the 15 to 20%. We went from...
Oh, you mean on the parent share?
Yeah, on the parent share.
Right. Health, I was thinking of...
Oh, yeah, no, more health. I'm sorry.
That one would be factored in as well. Yeah, if there was a subsequent increase from 15
to 20.
Right,
so the decisions that the administration made on Title 20 and the co-pays, that's all. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. A couple of more. Someone's jumping ahead because we always thinking sort of budget, but like in public works, the plan, every year we see schedules of replacing trucks and equipment, the motor pools, vehicle replacements, all those. You're making those decisions now as you're going through 2011 budget of what kind of replacement programs and all that?
We're looking at the entire fleet.
Because, you're saving money on maintenance and repairs, and before you know it, we have to buy more trucks than we sort of planned on because we didn't do the maintenance repair. So I just want to make sure that you understand that we do look at trying to go, if you try to save a few dollars on maintenance, you end up spending $80,000 on a new truck. And so I hope when I see savings on maintenance repairs, where are you heading on, replacing the vehicle? So we are sensitive to those kinds of activities. Department of Probation. Again, looking ahead, I'm told 40 or 41 probation officers, employees left or leaving or left, and some supervisors, some not. But again, below budget. But in the past, this happened many years ago. We took money out of probation for whatever reason, and a lot of people ended up. The judges lost confidence in the probation department. Start putting you back in jail, and we had to redo it. So as you see those numbers, again, just talking about the plan, make sure probation doesn't get hit too hard because you'll end up losing money on making money. So I just raise that. Leandro's Law, which I guess would be in the probation part. Do your projections, because the state's not paying for that, if my recollection
is. No, we're bearing the cost of the admission loss.
So those additional costs for Leandro's Law, You've got in here?
Yes.
Okay. Public safety, I didn't see an overtime. So the overtime's of public saving just in your annual regular. You didn't really call that out. And when I met with Commissioner Walwood, he was rather, and I thought, he was rather proud, as he told me, of his overtime reductions. And I don't, you know, you called it out in a lot of the other departments. You didn't call it out in public safety, so I'm just wondering if that's in there somewhere else.
But it would be in the savings number. I didn't break it out specifically.
Okay. You see, but now that's for the year? So that's, now again, these are projections for the year again?
Again, these are 12-month numbers.
All right, because I seem to think he told me he was doing better than that, but all right, we'll pursue that. And the and again, looking ahead, we have a new DWI law coming on the books in December, which we were told last year would probably have some budgetary impact. So I'm just, again, alerting you to the forfeiture law that's coming on. I assume you're going to be dealing with that in next year's budget. It won't really affect this year's budget, but that's coming along. And finally, just a pet, we talked about utilities before. One of my pet projects is the Yonkers Joint Treatment Plant micro turbine project with NYPA. Is that still, are you aware of where that is? Is that moving forward to save 700,000 years electric bills?
I mean, I believe it's in the, you know.
Still, John, still moving forward.
Still moving forward? Just, all right, don't forget about it.
We're dealing with Con on the last issue.
Okay.
The cost is close to $9 million, and the payback is like 15 years. We're in the process of finalizing.
Okay, good. Good. Just want to make sure I don't lose it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Mr. Stolt, you...
I'm sorry, excuse me, one more question. Medicaid, MMIS, you show going from $204 million to $220 million. What happened to our 3% cap?
It's the IGT, 15.7.
Oh, so it is in there. Okay, yeah. That's where the IGT is. Okay.
Yeah, he had legend.
Oh, no, because you said you weren't... I took the IGT out of it, but for that number, on this page, it is there. Okay, I see that, 15.7. Okay, good. Okay. You have a cap on Medicaid, I'll be paying more than that.
On the list, just for questions, I mean, just for future details, to get the breakout that would go to public safety on the additional cost, or the cost for the transition from the medical center to the to Mount Vernon, right? To which, so whatever cost that were, because that would have to get factored in as well.
Yeah. All right. It's noted.
Thank you.
The detail on the prisoner transportation to Mount Vernon and then what additional cost that may create. Mr. Stoll, we also have you here for the amendment number 3353, operating budget amendment for the budget committee 3353. And members, let me let you know, due to the number of items, we will be meeting on Tuesday at 10 a.m. And that will be...
Which Tuesday?
7th.
The 7th.
9-7.
At 10 a.m. so that we can discuss other items that may need to be on our agenda that evening. And Larry, this is a transfer from the Department of Health. Are you ready to...
That's fine. The budget transfer, yes.
You want to highlight it for the members?
I mean, essentially, as you know, there are two budget transfers we requested. This is one that would be a board transfer. $2.4 million because of the costs in the early intervention account. It's mainly due to the cost for autism.
Right.
And since the sales tax was down, we have savings in the amount that we transfer to the municipalities, so we're proposing to do a budget transfer to balance this account so we don't, you know, show an over appropriation in our financial statements. And that's, I mean, essentially, this is my understanding, is something we do every year as we do budget transfers to the extent of our deficits in certain accounts. And we don't, you know, technically you can't overspend an account.
Right, right. Any other members have any questions on this transfer? Otherwise, a motion is in order for budget.
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Mr. Burton, second by Ms. Frankman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Due to some questions, the other transfer that you requested, 3354, we're going to do on Monday when my staff get the proper answers. Larry, nothing arranged, but I think there's some specific numbers that are not matching.
Okay, that's fine. We'll work with your staff to
Please
clarify that. Yeah.
So that would satisfy your presence here today. You don't have anything else for today. And I'm sorry you were the messenger, but I want everybody else to realize I want some details to the numbers.
I understand. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Mr. Saul, and your deputy. All right, moving right along, we're going to bring Anne-Marie Bird for this recovery attempt that we're doing from the medical center.
What?
Where's what?
That's the item. The item. 3368.
Number 10.
Oh, recovery of the money.
Yes.
I see.
The week over.
3368.
All right.
Oh, the recover.
Yeah. Well, listen, I just add a Y at the end there. How are we doing with this, Anne-Marie?
It's moving along. It's moving a little slowly. I did meet with the medical center, and we had a discussion about the money that is owed, and they have requested that we provide them with backup for each of the items for the years 2006 through 2008. They want to see the actual bills that we have over the 3 year period put towards the MOE, which is the maintenance of effort for the $85 million. So we're in the process. I'm getting a lot of cooperation from the departments, especially from DPW, because that's the bulk of the backup is coming from them. They have not committed to, after seeing everything, if they are going to pay it. But at least they're admitting, or their understanding is that there are bills and they're going to look at them. But they haven't committed that they're going to pay it after they see it.
Mr. Ting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the question, Mr. Chairman, to Commissioner Berg. Right, good morning.
Good morning.
I think the request, the original letter that you sent to them said that they could recognize that there is a debt, I mean, and send that in a writing back to us so that we could continue on through this process. So that would help us in being able to close the books and do the CAFRA. Would that be fair? That if we got a letter from the medical center that said that they're recognizing that debt, that would be in the CAFRA, right?
No.
So they have to either pay their bill or...
This amount of money has been recognized appropriately in the financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
On our financial statements.
In the past?
No, this year, for 2009. It's in the...
My understanding was it wasn't in the right category, that's what...
Yeah, it still has an 08 number. It's not changing our numbers for 2009 the way it's reflected right now.
But we put up a designation to offset a portion of that.
Appropriately, because there's an allowance against it. Because
so
we're not sure we're getting
fund
it.
Balance.
Say it again?
That does impact the amount of fund balance that we can utilize in...
Correct.
Right, which is the real issue. The issue is that with whatever projection, we know that there's a negative projection for 2011, whatever that number is, right? You know, we can quibble about later on, but that number impacts on the fund balance. So that's part of the reason that I believe that we were asking for that recognition.
At this point, there is no change in their standing as to if they owe this money. If they have not committed to paying it at this point.
Well, they don't recognize it as an amount owed.
Correct.
Right. So it just seems to me that where we left off was, we as county government have asked a public benefit corporation to pay us money that we believe they owe us.
Correct.
From prior transactions that have gone on between the two of us. Their response has been, okay, we hear you. Could you please provide a more detailed explanation as to what it is that is involved here. What is it, in fact, you're asking us for? We need detail, backup on these different things. So it seems to me that what you're doing, we appreciate your good efforts. What you're doing is they've made the request. Now you're in the process of trying to satisfy what it is that they have asked for. I think... if I can offer some advice, I think that we We just provide to them what it is that they've asked right. for, and then we cross the bridge when we come to it on the issue of whether or not they're going to pay it.
Right.
They're not indicating that they are going to pay it, but they're also not indicating that they're not going to pay
correct.
It.
Correct.
They simply ask for the information.
Correct.
Okay.
The meetings have not been adversarial.
Yeah, well, that's good.
They're more informational, and they know my position, and,
Mr. Chairman, do
yeah,
you...
But is there any timeline? Because if we just keep going information back and forth, we need some closure to this, I think. And the reason why, when we met the last time you were here, we told them within a week we wanted an answer, and it's been over a month. And is the end of the year going to come, or we're going to continue with this? Well,
I would say not. I responded to your request as you had asked and sent the letter out. I then followed up with another question as to when I would hear from them. They then came and had a meeting. So I've had two meetings with them. As I said, they have been very cooperative. The dialogue has been good, strong. They know our opinion, my opinion on it. There is some leeway in the numbers, because in the original numbers there was an estimate for the year 2008, so we're reconciling that. They were never given a final number back in 2008. So we're coming to terms with the reconciliation, and I think it's moving along. Will I have a number for you next week? Will they pay it in a week or two? No. Soon, yes, but I don't have a date.
Is a month a good estimate?
I think I'll have an answer for you soon, but I can't give you when that would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to close out, so we can keep going to the next thing.
Yes,
our consultant is specifically engaged to work on this particular item. That would be Mr. Boland, by the way, mm-hmm. right? So Mr. Boland is specifically engaged in that. If you, Mr. Chairman, could ask the commissioner to have Mr. Boland be part of those conversations as.
Thank you.
Oh, there. Oh, sorry,
I didn't
see Mr. Boland back there. That's it.
And I think the consultant
is back there. Mr. Consultant, how are you?
I'm just very so that you understand. The last time you were in here when we discussed this item, and things just because we didn't have the specific information that you provided in the committee at this point, and if we would have had it, it would have been easier. At this point, we definitely want our consultant engaged in what
at the meeting.
At the meeting. And that way we don't have to wonder what is happening.
As you also know, it was the information from then was not clear documentation for all. We were dealing with a couple of emails back and forth. So from that, we're recreating the information from 2006. So that's understandably they want the information.
Yeah, and again, once the information is being provided, and you and Mr. Boland can tell us what the real number is, if this number is going to change, then let them know that this committee was even willing to put this in a resolution form to request payment.
Sure.
Because we have to close our books and have some real numbers before so that we can move forward. And that is the urgency at the end of the day.
Sure.
Yes.
Sorry, forgive me.
Yes,
forgive me for not knowing the history behind this, but just out of curiosity, and you may or may not be able to answer this, why, were these new services in 2006, why were they not paying us?
It's a pretty long history of the separation of the medical center from
the
county, and there was in the transition agreement and the cooperative agreement, there was a three-year period that the county was going to continue to be providing up to $85 million of support, mm-hmm. and utilities and IT services and different services. And this is the reconciliation that in 2008, it was just the county numbers are over $85 million. So it's that difference between the $85 million that we are looking to recover.
Okay.
And there's more detail to it, Sheila.
Sure.
You can definitely, as an individual legislator, request it from Bob or from her. But it's complicated. Although that's why we don't have an easy answer. And this committee is just requesting, give us a real number. If we are also on funding, let's try to acquire so that we can count with this money or not count with it. We're going to move forward. Thanks so much for the feedback. And again, we want Bob Bowen directly engaged in the meeting so that we don't have to be to call upon you to come and report on this item, but it is of high interest to this committee.
Number eight.
Are you here for any other item, Ms. Byrne?
Well, I was here for the budget transfers, if I could be of any assistance for that other piece.
Yeah, that other piece has been postponed to the 7th.
And the board is aware of how urgent it is that that...
Which one is that one?
The other six...
Number million. Nine?
Yes, we are, and that's the reason why we're meeting on Monday morning.
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Sorry. Monday morning, hopefully, I'm playing tennis.
We can come
Tuesday.
Here.
Tuesday. Just make sure that you get my staff the answers that they're requesting, because they're holding it back because there are some numbers that aren't necessarily matching. Again, we already postponed the item. So just make sure we have the accurate information. Huh?
All right. Well, you have those numbers then, Olivia?
There's something else we're looking at.
All right. And again, I want them to sort it out. Thanks so much. All right, moving right along, I have jointly with Public Works item 3233 and 3234. I understand. These two items are related, and for interest of time, Commissioner.
Yes, I'm going to go over. Kathy is here, but I think she would have stayed, but I can do hers too. All right, as I'm giving out hers first. This is she requested $1.62 million for replacement of the seam in the bleachers balcony. And, and actually what happened was that, the item that was removed from the 1.62 was actually the basketball courts, the basketball hoops, and some related scoreboard equipment. And we were able to accomplish those items under a previous capital, the one that the board bonded for $1.78 million. So in essence, the capital request that she's asking for, we're asking for a reduction from $1.62 million to $580,000, which is strictly for the balcony seating. There's approximately 1,400 seats in the balcony area, many of which, if you've gone to County Center, are closed. Sections are closed because the seatings are defective.
What else is, Mr. Chim?
Well, we have some severe discrepancies on the numbers that I'm getting from my staff here. Can you explain it before we even...
That change will require the numbers that are in the back to all change. For this act,
correct.
And for the next one.
Correct. Okay. Correct. We understand that. And I know Ann's been talking to Robert and talking to Lorraine. We'll make that change.
On both of them?
Yes. Yes,
we'll make... legislation?
The legislation will be changed appropriately to reflect the new numbers.
So the committee can decide whether they
want
to sign this out today or wait
until
next week.
Well, it's up to the Chairman of Public Works, though.
Yeah, this is a joint item. Mr. Chairman, as you're hearing from our staff, the whole document needs to change. The act needs to change because the numbers need to match. And the administration the commissioner is in agreement.
Right. What I'd like to do is go over both items with you to make sure that you guys are comfortable with the items, and then we can make the change logistically to reflect what the right numbers are.
Why don't we handle the explanation of the items now?
Okay.
Right. We have both committees here, and then I tell you when the paperwork is finished, ready to go, then I know for parks I would prefer to take it in at that point.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that would automatically cause a joint committee meeting for the 7th at 10 a.m.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Come
so the first capital is a box capital. Kathy was here. I think she's up on the ninth floor. But as I said, the request in the agenda was for $1.62 million to replace the bleacher seating at County Center, the balcony seating. There are approximately 1,400 seats in the balcony, many of whom have been shut down because they're broken and defective, so the parks department has shut down the seating. The seating that's previously on the floor was the Irwin telescopic seating, which the board appropriated funds for the 2000, they were appropriated 2006 for the 2007 Empire Games, as you recall. Originally, the venue for County Center was supposed to be the venue for the gymnastics, which is why the seating needed to be placed at that time. That bond, the seating has been completed. It was done by Irwin telescopic seating. So this is for the balcony seats that remain in County Center. We reviewed our budget estimates based on Olivia and Ann calling us, and it was an oversight on our part department. We had actually included in the $1.62 million both the balcony seating and the basketball courts and ancillary structure, which would be the hoops and the scoreboard. Those components were previously done under another section of this capital. They were done as part of the $1.78 million appropriation. We were able to save approximately a half a million plus in that capital from the curtain project, which was also completed. And at that time, because of the defective nature of the basketball courts, the Parks Department used the remaining balance from that capital to purchase the components that are in this present capital. So this capital will be amended to reflect just the balcony seating at a revised budget estimate of $580,000.
Okay. On this particular item, or the question, Mr. Gowski.
Yes, I think I was at the Little Theater, I think in May. If I recall, there are still incandescent light bulbs.
Correct. That is underrated.
We banned those 2 years ago.
Okay.
And that was part of that. One is just replace the damn light bulbs. If you have to change the fixtures, is there money in here to change those fixtures, or are you keeping the fixtures?
The incandescent lighting, as well as all other inefficient lighting, is being done as part of a CIC with NYPA. They have picked out all fixtures. We County Center, they're complementary to the building and to the... And NYPA is doing that project right now, and it will be done through energy savings. I'm not sure exactly where the CIC is, but I know that we just completed. I had a meeting with NYPA last month on all the current projects. That is one of them.
They were banned 2 years ago, and they still burned. Every time I go to a Little Theater.
But as you recall, this lighting upgrade by NYPA will include only a Little Theater, but also all the hallway lights and all the other lights. Okay. They did an entire survey of the building.
All right.
Okay. That's you'll either see the CIC shortly.
Marty, the light bulbs are.
But you're absolutely right. That was one of the real sore points, was the incandescent lighting in the Little Theater. It's been there for quite a while.
Okay.
That's in your digestive gas, Marty. It's going. Met with him last week. All right? So we're good.
All right. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman. So,
Mr. Jagger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was... an oversight that the budget, the fiscal staff did their analysis on.
Absolutely.
And now the numbers will be adjusted and
correct.
It'll be
to reflect the current number, which is 580.
Okay. 508. Thank you, Ms. Chen.
508
or
580.
The basketball rims have been changed. We're not shortchanging the basketball players. The rims have been changed. The rims have changed.
Scoreboard. Okay. Everything's done.
We'll stand up for the basketball.
Absolutely.
And how is the scoreboard look?
No, everything's done. I spoke to Kenny Center this morning to make sure they had no other outstanding basketball-related items. They assured me that everything is up to 100% what they want to be.
Absolutely.
They lowered it a little bit so you can dump it.
But you said those bad knees were catching.
I do want to put it for reclining seats, though, with the balcony.
We'll get you a reverse seat.
Yeah. Not in this economic time. The detail that we're lacking is to which capital project you're charging the different things.
No. The basketball courts were charged against RCC04. As you noticed, RCC04 started in 2001. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 appropriations to date. It's in the fact sheet. So it was charged against the 2006 $1.78 million bond that the board approved, which is for County Center interior renovations.
That was the 178.
Correct.
That was 2006.
Yes.
Six.
Bond legislation.
And Commissioner, let me bring some clarity to this, and this is the reason why my fiscal staff is concerned.
Okay.
Because RCC 04, County Center Interior rehabilitation.
Correct.
Okay, the Bond Act will, if approved by the Honorable, fund the design and installation of an intrusion detection security system.
Correct.
Addressable fire protection system and stage improvement for the
Correct.
Rochester County Center.
All those things were done. And or related. If you notice in the bottom, it has and or related areas. What happened was that the original curtain replacement on the stage was budgeted around $800,000. We were able to do the work, replace the curtains for close to $200,000. We ended up saving approximately a little over $500,000 within that bond ordinance, where the other four items in the bond were all completed. And if you notice in the bonding act, which I have a copy, it says and or related areas within county center. At that time, the floor was defective, it was starting to warp, and we actually, county center decided that it would be prudent at that time to replace the floor, which was part of a subsequent capital under this same capital account anyway. And that's what they did. So it clearly is within the bonding language.
No, but that is the thing, Mr. Joe. It's not clearly related because we're talking about design installation, intrusion detection, addressable fire protection, improvements, for the wishes, it's not clearly related, and that's the concern of my fiscal staff, and that's what I direct them to notice. So I really, really need you to funnel this one.
You need we need an amendment.
We need to amend the
other bond so that the paperwork trail is right.
Okay.
I mean, so that it reflects accurately on what
and by the way,
was done for finance.
We are
purposes.
Not in any way, shape, or form trying to kill this. We
no.
want to get it right
okay.
and the proper documentation, and we have 7-8 days to put it together. But again, I credit to the budget staff because at the end of the day, you know, we're following the numbers, and here I'm going for the numbers, and this is what stuff we wanted to do.
But if it's
not clearly related, which is going back to what you said, clearly related is not, if we need to amend something, we're not objecting
okay, but
to
I will
it.
Give you a copy of the Bonding Act, which says all those items and or related areas of work. And I will leave that with Olivia. So.
But yeah, but
okay.
So it's a matter. It's a philosophical mm-hmm. issue of what the language should say. I understand.
Oh well, it's more process.
Okay.
Did bond counsel say that the basketball court was related to fire protection, detection, security, and stage improvements?
I will discuss that with the law department.
Because if they said that, I'm looking forward to for their discussion on our HIF dollars.
Or we will amend the old bond to include that and take it out of the current one.
And okay. I think that's what my
okay.
staff is,
okay.
is highlighting.
Okay.
At the end of the day, it is the budget
sure.
committee meeting,
Not
and the public works end of
okay.
it
sure.
makes sense, and nobody's objecting to,
sure.
to what you're trying to
sure.
achieve.
Okay.
Let's just make it insane.
Absolutely. No problem.
All right, so Mr. Chairman, I think the discussion has been... So, for the members, we come on the 7th. We don't want to spend a lot of time. Your explanations are very, very
yeah,
much appreciated.
If there's any questions, uh-huh. ask them now.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Any other concerns on items 32, 34? Mr. Bull.
Yes, John.
No, Bob, you're going to have to project.
What is it, Bob?
Look at the 2011 budget where this has an ultimate cost of $15,440,000.
He said that in the capital budget for 2011, the cost has a higher number, right? $15 million.
But you know, Bob, each piece that a county center is treated as a separate item for referendum purposes. We do this continuously on legacy projects. Where we exceed the $10 million threshold in the overall program, and it's by project. We've had this discussion before in the past. Each project within the subset of the capital is treated as a separate project. Otherwise, you would never be able to do legacy. Most legacy projects are over $10 million, and they're all treated separately within the whole bonding source. So I understand what you're saying, that you know, if you look at the RCC 04, if you add up all the various appropriations, it exceeds $10 million. But each one is treated separately, just like the HVAC is treated separately from the seating.
All right. So again, if you have any other concerns or questions,
Is there any questions on the CBA for the $2 million of ERA funds that we want to, that was
to
the second
accept.
Item?
Three,
yes,
$2 million.
No, it is not a question.
Okay.
No, this is good, right?
Yes, this is part of the $4.5 million.
Which item are we talking about?
The $2 million in stimulus
money. Yeah, the
CBA.
You want to, Mr. Chairman, you want to roll that?
Yeah.
Let's accept that.
So...
can we sever these two?
Everybody know?
Yeah, no. We're looking at them separate.
Right.
So item 32, 34, any concerns from the members as explained by the commissioner?
Well, Howard, just like I said, just again, the oversight, it's great that that we're getting it paid for, but are we, who looks to see exactly what energy efficient, the criteria, the standard, what are we putting in? So we know for the next 10, 15, 20 years,
right.
We get what we want.
This is a NYPA project.
Okay.
NYPA has already bid and awarded. Actually, the contract is already starting work because it includes both the boiler upgrade and the HVAC, which obviously can wait till next spring. But the boiler upgrade was something we wanted to undertake now for this heating season because we'd already lived through last heating season. We didn't want to make sure that County Center would have heat this year. So this is a NYPA project. NYPA has already contracted with Diggins Mechanical on our behalf. The CIC is falling as soon as the board appropriates the CBA.
Okay, so did NYPA give us an analysis of the projected savings for next year's budget?
I will
give it to Larry Soule.
Yes.
And then give it to us.
Well,
make sure it's in the budget.
I can give you, I meet monthly with NYPA on every project NYPA is doing for me. What they do is they give me the appropriation of the anticipated cost. They also give me the anticipated savings for each measure that they intend to implement on our behalf.
Yeah, no, this would be benefit to us.
Okay. Okay.
All right, a motion is in order, members?
For this 3234?
Yes, for budget on appropriations, moved by Ms. Meyer.
Second for Public Nelson. Works.
But this is not the...
So moved.
No, it's not the
3233.
Not the first one.
Right.
Not the bond act.
Can you say it?
I'm sorry, I didn't recall what the committee decided to do. Just so you know, the numbers need to be changed on both acts.
That's
why.
Why don't we do
it? RCC 04 also?
Yeah, until the paperwork.
RCC 04.
Until the paperwork is firmed up this time.
Okay, so we'll wait.
I withdraw your motion.
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. All right, so again, members, please, any other concerns on these items? Because it's great, we want to move forward. We just want to get the paperwork and the process in order. Are you here for any other items?
No, we're good. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Mr. Connor, thanks so much, Mr. Hsu, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, we're moving right along. Item ID 3356 and 58, Yonkers Waterfront, and we have Mr.
Pinto.
Natarelli and Company.
Good morning.
Oh, Mr.
And if you
Pinto.
Could... introduce our guest from Yonkers.
James Pinto, Director of Waterfront
Development,
City of Yonkers. Anthony Zano, Director of Design with the County Planning Department. Good morning, all. And what you have before you this morning are two capital project requests from BLA 01 and from RYON 1 for the construction of an amphitheater parking garage from RYON 1 and for a portion of the Riverwalk trailway from BLA 01. A couple of years ago, your board approved the design funding for those two projects, a total of $1 million between the two capital projects, and now we're requesting the funding for the construction of those two projects. We're talking about an area in the city of Yonkers, the map is rather small, but near the JFK Marina and Trevor Park. There's an aerial photo of the area showing the proposed development. The amphitheater is located adjacent to the Hudson River Museum in Trevor Park, which is a city park, and there'll be a parking garage across the street, which will provide parking for the patrons of the amphitheater and also for the patrons of Trevor Park and for JFK Marina if needed. And then as a portion of this project, also particularly important for the county's planning department, is the construction of a portion of the Riverwalk Trailway, which will connect the Glenwood train station by a pathway through JFK Marina, where patrons will have outstanding views of the Palisades and the Hudson River, to be able to come up along JFK Memorial Drive and enter the amphitheater, and then also proceed along JFK Memorial Drive up to Wilburton Avenue, where there will be additional improvements made, and connect all the way over to the old Croton Trailway. So again, it's important for us because we think this project provides a gateway project for both Riverwalk and for the city of Yonkers, in that we will connect the Riverwalk Trailway and be able to access cultural and recreational facilities in the city. And Jim is here to answer any questions for the city, and Anthony's here to answer any questions about the design for the county.
And Mr. Natarella, give us a historic perspective of how it came to this, because this is that, going back to that $15 million from way back when, and so on and so forth. Maybe you want to do it, Mr. Chairman?
The only thing I want to just help out with, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So for speed purposes,
okay.
we authorized the RYON portion of that.
Right.
So in the administration was to do the Riverwalk portion because it's a complete project, so the yellow portion. So we already have on the 7th agenda the RYON project, the two red spots, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The IMA needed to be the IMA needed to be new because the original IMA was only for planning, right? So we voted out a revised IMA that excluded the Riverwalk, right? The administration said, no, we want to make sure we're doing the complete project. So now the revised IMA, which is in front of us now, is for the complete project. The RYON is already voted out. We're not doing anything else with that today because it's already sitting there. And the BLA-01 is the construction part of Riverwalk that is in front of us, right? So we're really only dealing with two out of the three pieces because we already did the first piece, the money for the
amphitheater.
Right. So it's completing the whole project. And again, the administration wants to make sure that it was a complete project. It's a good thing. It's certainly my district for disclosure purposes, but I think that it works out well. So the two pieces in front of us are amending the IMA to do the construction part of it. That was the amendment. That's what the public hearing is set for. So we are, by voting this out today, we will be able to act on that item on the 7th meeting. And the BLA-01, which is the legacy program dollars, that would be just a separate item that we need to vote on. So, you know, certainly, without questions, Mr. Chairman, I certainly would move it since it's my district.
All right. Legislator Spreckman would second the motion of the dollars. Yonkers legislator. You can move it for Public Works if you want.
That's fine. So.
Okay. Motion. And I'll second your motion, Mr. Gordon, for Public Works. And we have Mr. Rogaski for.
So all four of us.
There you go. Right.
I have a question. Because it is in the chairman's district, I have a question.
As long as you don't vote down, they'd be all right.
Only one question. Yeah,
through the years, you have had a lot of questions on this one, so let's see which one.
What kind of light bulbs do they have?
We originally talked about $7.5 million. So big picture, are we still? Is it still $7.5 million?
Yes.
Because the memo from the county executive, second paragraph, talks we need to. This local law would authorize to amend the IMA. To contribute additional funding to the city and to reassign the obligation to construct Riverwalk from the city to the counties. Now,
that's not the $7.5 million. That's the Riverwalk, which is a legacy program, right?
That's why I said that we're still seven and a half, or we're more. The Riverwalk, we're more than seven. We're combining. That's why it's confused. There's $7.5 million, and now the Riverwalk is falling in here. But the Riverwalk is what's
$1 million.
All right, so it's $8.5 million.
Right, but
yes, but $1 million was already already bonded for the design portion, so that those bonds are being rolled in with the new bonding of the $7.5 million to give you the $8.5 million.
Okay, but we've done Riverwalk up the Hudson. We've done money up the Hudson, so this is just a piece of the Riverwalk.
That's correct.
Right. At this location, but not to be confused with the $7.5 million that was part of the project we've talked about over the last year.
Yeah, with the I&I and all that. That's correct.
Okay, so yeah. $7.5 million for that project.
$1 million.
All right, I just want to keep the numbers straight. Mm-hmm. Back to the parking garage, the question I asked a year ago. Now that you've pursued this another year with something going on, where do we stand in terms of sharing any parking revenues?
That's still the case. Revenues that are in excess of the operating expenses, as I explained last time, you're absolutely right, would be shared with the county. And that's in the IMA.
It's an IMA.
And the percentage of the sharing, it's not 95.5. What is it?
50.
So above the cost
Of operating.
Of operating, yeah.
Right.
And it's being operated, if I recall, by the Yonkers Parking Authority.
That is correct.
And I recall that that's questions I had was, well, how, what kind of relationship is there between us, the city? I guess the city has a certain amount of control over the parking authority, or no one has control of these parking authorities. So the oversight of that parking authority to look at the operations, the revenue, so that there will be potentially.
The city does have oversight.
Yes.
Right. And, I mean, I hate to get this kind of micromanaging, but because we do have a role here, so I need to know as we march through that, we're sitting here, we're going to get 50% of the overage, and then I'm told, well, it's the Yonkers Parking Authority is going to be running the show, not just Yonkers. So I just need to know we have a system in place where the county is talking to the city. Or because I'm not sure if we're going to go straight to the parking authority, but what is the plan 2-3 years from now? We're now auditing or looking for the dollars, and Mr. Chairman, to you, you know, what just, so we're not unnecessarily stepping on people's toes, but there should be a process in place where audits are, does the IMA talk about, an audited financial that goes from the parking authority to the city, does?
The city has to make annual reports to the county on the finances of
Mr. Bessie, you make sure you ask, and they were using LED lighting in the parking lot. I think you asked that question, you know, to Mr. Pitts over there.
That's right.
Thanks,
somebody. All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. If there are no any other concerns, both items and both committees have been moved and seconded. If I may, Mr. Chairman, for both committees, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Pinto, always well.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care. Take care, gentlemen.
All right, moving right along, we're going to go to the RFP. This is the final joint item we have, Mr. Chairman. With Ryan Playland, we should have Mr. Oros and Mr. Tartaglia to go over these items. And members, you have the resolution that was moved forward from Public Works, and if the members in this committee want to please look at the resolution and the motion would be in order if necessary at this committee. Mr. Oros, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Tartaglia.
How are you doing?
Gentlemen, for both committees, the members, and for our audience, we're meeting here today to, move forward a very important discussion that will, mark the what I think will be the beginning of a successful effort between the Board of Legislators and the administration in resolving a number of questions and issues that concern us here in government on the inside of this building and our public on the outside of the building. But let me just be very brief and simply say that as part of the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee's work plan for this year, we had scheduled a project that would open about this time. We were looking for us to get well into the season, near its conclusion, to start to look at not only this season's performance and some of the issues, observations that have been made relative to the 2010 season at Playland, but also to deal with some of the concerns that this government has had over many years with respect to Playland and its long history and of course its recent performance, in particular its financial performance, and how that has impacted the county budget. Just in brief, we know that for decades it's operated as a family amusement center, an entertainment center. Over the years, we have provided through the general fund support to its operation. In recent years, we have looked at its capital needs, and we have made investments into the capital requirements of Playland. We've made investments into operating systems, the technology that's used to run Playland day to day. Recently, we've been faced with a declining attendance after a trending upward for quite a few years prior to 2000. Since that point, we're probably looking at a trend line that is more in the negative than anything else. So given all of these things, the Parks Committee, which handles the substantive aspects of issues, scheduled this rather in-depth project analysis and project for the board to take on through its committee. And at the same time, we have a brand new administration that with a lot of interest and open mind has gone into these same issues, has some ideas of its own, and recently made us aware of the fact that it thought that a valuable tool might be the proposals that are solicited through an RFP. They've gone through a process that resulted in the release of an RFP on Friday, and so the invitation was extended to the administration by Parks and Budget and Appropriations to come in and talk about the RFP and you know what that's looking for, and as time permits, maybe some discussion about some current thinking on the part of the administration now with respect to Playland and its issues. And I know some of the committee members may have some ideas of their own that they want to put on the table. Nothing to be concluded today, but it should represent some good information that will flow to the legislature and also the beginning of what will be an important conversation that will run for many, many months through the balance of this year and into next. So, gentlemen, once again, good to see you. And before we get into their presentations, I know from the Parks Committee, any members like to comment before we get into this?
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the sixth whereas clause on the resolution, first of all...
We're not going to the resolution right now?
Let me just comment on the resolution. The resolution that you see represents a lot of different sources contributed to the resolution. The ideas that were brought forward in recent weeks here in the legislature. Some of them were put into the resolution that's before you. The resolution was taken up last week by the committee. It was modified in part and put out in the form that you see. The intention being that it ultimately would go to the floor. However, budget and appropriations is mentioned in the resolution. It would be the chairman's option to bring that before the budget committee. He's chosen to do so it'll be an item to be considered by the budget committee this morning for whatever their pleasure may be.
Well, in following that, the sixth whereas clause, and I know this is a document that's in flux right now, we've taken amendments, but I would suggest rather than having where we say county officials need to answer the question, and then we have here to bolster attendance, what needs to be done to improve the visitors' experience, enjoyment of Playland while keeping the park viable, I would suggest we delete that and just say what should the county do with in the future with respect to the future viability of Playland. This would almost connote that we're looking to continue Playland as it is. We're looking to bolster attendance. I'm not saying that's not a possible idea, but why don't we look at the whole picture and see what the future viability of the park should be, rather than limiting the question. That would be my suggestion.
I don't see this as a limit.
It's a whereas.
It's a sixth whereas.
No, I understand. I don't
if I may.
We really want to concentrate on the RSP. The legislature. Thank you, Mr. Boris. And again, this was already moved forward from the...
Yeah, this has been reported out by the Parks Committee.
By the Parks Committee.
So it is what it is.
It is. But
I must not have made that meeting.
I believe it, there was a lot of discussion.
I was on vacation, I'm being reminded.
I sat in my
Gordon, I covered it. I'm still on vacation.
What kind of vacation was that?
Yeah, okay. I was going to be subpoenaed, guys, but I couldn't find it.
All right. On the RSP, Mr. Oros.
Sure.
And again, the reason why this resolution was moved forward was because...
I don't have this resolution, so I don't know what you're talking about.
3379. Here, pass this to him.
All right. Was because, and I'm not going to the resolution, we're going to the RFP, as I said.
This isn't the one that was, this doesn't look the same as the one from the last meeting.
No, that's the current item that the Public Works moved forward. And it's potentially on for us. But again, the reason why the resolution even took life was because as legislators, we really felt that the two committees that should have the oversight of anything that is happening in Plano, budget and parks, were not being engaged in the process. And to that tune, this RFP went out on the 27th and without any review from the committees. And that's the reason why the resolution exists. So the RFP is out. You know, I heard about it to News 12 because I did not have this item before. And that is the reason, George, why we want to engage ourselves in such a significant decision that may or may not be made in anything that's going to happen with the park.
Why don't we do, for starters, yeah. I had a good conversation with George at the end of the week, and I knew that one of the features today of our get-together would be an overview of the RFP and, you know, what it contains. So why don't we start there?
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't I start going back in time into when the county executive took office in January. We were beginning to look at Playland during transition. A lot of things have been mentioned about Playland and what can be done and what can't be done and how it should be done. The decision was made that obviously for 2010 there could be only small changes made. I think the only change made was changing some of the operating hours and some minor things like that. As we went into the summer, we saw that we had wonderful weather, but we also noticed that we still weren't attracting the revenues at Playland. I guess it was probably about 3 or 4 months ago, Parks Department started working with Law on an RFP, and the RFP, the initial RFP, the county executive felt was too targeted and specific. And the RFP that I think all of you should have gotten it on before the public announcement, I was there, they all went out by email prior to any public announcement.
Just like Gordon, I was actually on vacation.
All right, so, I mean, you learned about it by News 12, but that's not because we went to News 12.
No, but a lot of items I learned through to News 12.
Well, so do I. It happens that way. Okay. But we did send it to all of you before the media got it. At any rate, if you've all looked through it, I trust, and you will see that it is very open-ended, and that's the point. And we are looking for suggestions, and we are looking for innovative thinking. There are a lot of constraints with Playland. There's the fact that it's many of the structures are on the National Historic Landmarks. It is parkland, so you can't come in there and just do what you want. Being sensitive to the neighborhood, certainly we're not proposing any kind of alienation of parkland, although it's not prohibited under the RFP, but it will not be used if somebody wanted to build luxury condos there or a Walmart. That's just not going to happen. So that is what the RFP is directed to. We have a timetable that goes out in time, and in all likelihood, Playland next year, again, without maybe some minor tweaking around the edges, is probably going to operate very similar to how it did this year, because by the time these RFPs come back in February and we go through a process, you know, hopefully we get something that's worth exploring, there will be a period of time. The administration is committed to the city of Rye, to the town of Rye, And in my conversations with Chairman Ryan, I indicated to him we are committed to have representatives of the legislature, of the community, from our Parks Board, from Friends of Parks, and other interested parties to review the proposals that do come back, so that a decision will not be made simply by our Parks Commissioner or by the administration. It will be a process that will involve everybody once we see what, if anything, comes back from the proposals early next year. And I think that kind of summarizes it in a nutshell.
Members on the RFP?
Once again, you know, as we mentioned, you may want to get a chance to look it over the weekend. Fine. We didn't contemplate a page by page Q&A on mm-hmm. this. But I think we'll continue to look at it. You know, obviously,
you're welcome to submit a proposal.
Yeah.
We'll be making this decision on what the proposal is going to be. We'll be deciding what it is.
I think one of the things that I've said to the legislators over a long period of time, which stretches back to when the master plan was originally delivered to this board, and then more recently this year, was that. This is a big decision. Once you make it, it's not set in stone forever, but it's every once in a while you'll do a mid-course correction and you may modify some things and change your view on some things. But the administration is going to decide, what it thinks a good road to go down will be. But this board, obviously, cannot wait and see what particular avenue opens up. We have to spend some time thinking, all 17 of us, to spend time thinking about what we think the future of Playland should be. Trying to make sure that all the important considerations we're paying attention to. More recently, they seem to be, fiscally related. But when you look back at what Playland has been over the years and why we have operated it, we didn't operate it to run a profit each year. We operated it because it was a way to enhance the quality of life here in Westchester County. And most of us in this room remember as kids going there. And our friends went there. And our kids have gone there. And at this point, some of our grandchildren are going there, and it's a real good set of arguments that you can make to continue Playland as a family amusement park, an entertainment center. Those are easy arguments to make. When you add in the challenge of making it economically viable, especially, today in these times, that's a little tricky. But I, for one, as one legislator, believe that a lot of these things we can take a look at. We can make improvements. I think improvements that will affect the bottom line. And, that old thing, have your cake and eat it too. Well, for anybody that thinks like I do, that it's a great use of Playland, to continue to think of it as an amusement park and an entertainment center. I think that you can have that and at the same time be satisfied that it's not a burden on this on the taxpayers of this county. But to continue it's the way things have been going, no. But we're going to have to really roll up our sleeves and work together, board and administration, to figure out, what truly are the best practices that are out there that we could be using here. And maybe we've made some decisions recently, board and administration, over the past 5-10 years that have not been the greatest. Even this weekend, a few things that came up involved the marketing function and just the message that has gone out. And if your message is one way, it has one impact on the receiving public. If your message says something that's a slight bit different, it may affect how the public thinks about Playland in a different way. So, you know, there are a lot of different things that we need to look at. And once again, today's kind of kickoff, throwing a few things around the table here, isn't meant to resolve any of these. But I think everybody is on notice that there are many issues, there are many different ways that we can go. And once again, the message to the board is we cannot be passive in this process. We need to be active to reach a consensus as representatives of nearly a million people as to what we think should be the future use of this dedicated parkland that is in the county system. And once we determine what that use should be, what is the best way to manage or administer that operation.
Yes, if I may, I also just want to underscore the importance, as I think you obviously know, but I do want to underscore the importance of having the citizens of Rye involved in this, in all of these discussions. They are the neighbors, or conversely, Playland is the neighbor to a very vital neighborhood in the city of Rye, and they have formed their own committee. I have made sure that the committee chair has received this RFP. I think they would have liked to have been more involved in the development of the RFP, as the Board of Legislators would have liked to have been involved more in the development of that. But from this point going forward, I would like to very much underscore the importance of that.
Well, coming from a community that hosts a county garbage burning plant, I understand the burdens of being a host community. That's what they are. And
right.
So obviously, they have to be part of the process. And in terms of getting involved, you know, let's remember what an RFP is. It's simply a request for people to make proposals, no different than an ad in the paper for people to send resumes for a job. The real input has to come when these proposals come in. And we put together our panel that's going to review all of these. And hopefully we get two or three or four, maybe, that are viable and worthy of pursuing. And that's when the real work is going to begin, is next February and March, when these start to come in and we begin to make our decisions.
Oh, may I comment
also
back
also
to
framing,
that?
Framing that RFP.
Yes, I would like to say that.
Yes, okay.
Well, just like as one puts an advertisement in the paper for job applications, one generally outlines the job itself and what the parameters are so that you don't get, so that you're not misleading anyone. And in this case, I believe what the RFP is set out to do and could have benefited greatly from some legislative input as well as some host community input, is that I think there are definitely parameters that will change what one sees, what comes back to the request. And I respectfully submit that we would possibly get a different outcome if we had different input in the beginning.
Well, again, I think we tried to make it as broad as possible to bring as many types of responses in that would be viable. And if one of those responses comes in that doesn't fit with the community, it's not going to go anywhere. So, and there's ample benchmarks in here for anybody who responds to this proposal to get some indication as to whether something they're thinking of doing is actually ultimately going to fly. That's why we have the pre-proposal meeting in October. That's why we encourage them to come to the park. And in terms of all of the other disclaimers, I mean, law was very careful on putting in all of the potential, I don't want to call them pitfalls, but things that anybody that wants to submit a proposal should have to know up front. This is not like you're buying, you know, you're taking on vacant land in some community and you just have to abide by the zoning. There's a lot of things. There are union issues in here. There's parkland issues in here. There are issues about the community. There's a host of things that anybody submitting a proposal should be on notice about, and quite frankly, the burden's on them to do their due diligence and make sure they've addressed any of those issues or concerns before they submit a final proposal.
I would just like to add one postscript. Having lived and worked through a very uncomfortable situation on the Sound Shore with regards to a large, very large big box store coming in without doing its original due diligence, and that was a big box store called IKEA. I would really hate to see Playland become an IKEA in this county.
Well, I don't think it can. There's no way that it can.
One wonders when one reads the RFP.
Where do you see where an IKEA would be?
I'm just using that as an analogy.
Mr. Sargasso.
Thank you.
And I have you next, Mr. Jenkins.
You know, we can debate the RFP. It's out. I think there are the pre-submittal meetings, other things, but I think to the point that Legislator Myers was making, my concern with the message, because we want people to spend time and effort and money to really come in with ideas, and if people look at this, they'll make their decisions as they get more information through the process. So, you know, do they want to spend that time and effort? But big picture, the message that I see to hear, it goes to philosophy. There seems to be a certain emphasis, if you read through it, about cost benefit, you know, financial risk, you know, sort of making money. The context on page 2, you know, anyways, as with other parks, the county's interest is to provide broad access, enhance quality of life, balancing access with affordability, looking for a new business model. What I tell my constituents when, you know, issues come up like this, I listen, parks don't make money. So it seems to me, if I understand it, the people who be looking at this, I think the message they're going to get is, how do I come up with a business model, a proposal, that can convince the county, because the county, I think, is going to be looking at this from cost benefit, and I need to show that we're going to make money. You know, I may be wrong. That's just my assumption. But I would submit, and we've heard commissioners in the past talk about how much per capita Glen Island Casino costs, and, you know, probably Saxwood Parks, Pound Ridge, every parks. And we're not putting out an RFP on Ward, Pound Ridge, and on Glen Island. Glen Island loses hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's no RFP on that. So, again, the focus, somehow, because it's Playland, it's clearly different. It's a amusement park. Granted, to that extent, it's different. But a much larger picture, it's the same. It's parkland providing access to people to recreate, if that's the right verb. So in that context, why an RFP on Playland and not on Glen Island and Saxon Woods and Tibbetts and all this? So again, so what I would have preferred, I would have preferred, because now I find a resolution in front of us, this last week, about having the board wants the consent, input, approve RFPs. I think it would have been better for the whole process, and I think both floors, the 8th night, maybe bear a little, from my perspective, responsibility. This kind of discussion with George, you, and Playland administration here before the RFP, to get the points that Judy was saying, you know, what are the parameters, maybe hear from some of us on cost benefit and parkland, and have this conversation, and then, you know, we need to do an RFP, fine, go out, and maybe it would have been, from my perspective, the marketing is a good word, the focus of how are people reading this, and I think they're going to read it. We need to find a way to make money at Playland. What's my idea, if not build an idea, you know, to come in, where someone else might say, you know what, it's a great spot, I got a great idea, it might lose some money, but I think it would be a great idea for Westchester. So if we had, and I hope it may be future projects between our floor and the 9th floor, conversations around the table before we move to the next step would be helpful. So that's, I just want to make that point. In the context of marketing, to follow up on Chairman Ryan's point, the brochure I saw the other day, the colorful brochure, unlimited rides, off the website, you know, what I got here, the marketing, unlimited rides, and I asked a few staff people here, if you go to Playland, you have to buy the unlimited rides, and the answer was yes. Yes, because I think and I said, geez, I didn't think so. My point is, from a marketing point of view, and I don't know if you did customer surveys, I can only guess that maybe one reason why we're down so much in population, the people I run into, my constituents, they start yelling at me, it costs too much money. I said, you got it all wrong. You should be able to go there and buy tickets, you know, $1 at a time, as an add-on, as a benefit. Those who want to stay there all day, we have this unlimited ride deal that would be helpful. It should only be helpful. When I get complaints, then something's wrong. And when I see the marketing, unlimited rides, you don't see, and you can also just come the way you could come for the last 80 years, we seem to be pushing the unlimited rides. We're pushing the unlimited rides in our marketing. I can't say that's the reason for 300,000 less people, but it could be. Because the feedback I get, if one person complains about that, we've made a mistake on the marketing. Because nobody should complain about it. It should be only an alternative if you choose, if you do the math for your family. And geez, I can make money if I buy the unlimited rides. It should be a benefit. It seems to be a burden on people and they're not showing up. That's one comment on the marketing. And the other comment, my wife drove by Playland the other day. Actually, she went into Playland. She thinks she has the word riding. There's a sign out on the front of Playland on our property, please donate money to the disabled children of Westchester. And she was actually there working on a charity with Playland. Okay, we did some research. Apparently, it's referring to the Miracle Field, which is a good thing. But still, there are a lot. I mean, as much as I love the Miracle Field, there are a lot of charities out there. And so, this is off the RFP, but what is the public policy for putting signs up for the Cancer Society, for Miracle Field? Because I think it's on county land, and it doesn't really say identify the charity. It just says, I think, maybe my wife didn't see all the wording. Yeah. Give money to the disabled children of Westchester.
No, I think that was an agreement made earlier this year with the Office for the Disabled, specifically for the Day for the Disabled at Playland. It's not for Miracle Field. There's lack of funding everywhere, including Office for the Disabled, so they're trying to raise money to keep that day.
Was that sign up all summer, or just up for a couple of weeks?
I believe it's been up all summer.
Well, I mean, it's something I don't want to pursue that, but I'm just, as much as we want to support disabled kids, what's the public policy around having that sign? If you do it at Playland, you can do it at all our parks and on the county, you know, where are we promoting charities? It doesn't identify a charity, I don't think.
Maybe it would be better to have a sign that says to give to Friends of Parks or something.
Something that it's because
more generic.
People working in other charities. So my wife says, "Well, you know, what's going on here?" But I'm not sure public policy makes sense for the county to be promoting one over the other. Okay, thank you.
All right, Mr. Jake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm only going to start with the point that Legislator Rogowski made in the beginning. From a public policy perspective, the board sets policy, right? And I know the administration is very good at being aware of that. That the board sets that policy. So whatever the policy is, whether it's a sign up, you know, we work with, obviously we hear through the Parks Board things when they were making recommendations about things, but from the public policy perspective, to echo Legislator Myers' point, which is why there's a necessity for a resolution in the first place, the policy on Playland, I mean, the header says develop first, right? If it was, you know, let's manage, operate, maintain, or other proposals, you know, we might have said that around the table here. And certainly, and also echoing Mr. Rogowski's point, you know, I'm a big proponent of us having those conversations here on the table in the open and going back and forth on it, because it only can make the process better, right? Which is really where this resolution was driving towards. The resolution was driving from conversations that individuals have had to say that, oh, you know something, we think it's a good idea to do this. We really should go out and see if there's a better, stronger, faster way to do it, but also keeping in the context of what the legislature would support. Because having somebody come up and say, I can make $20 million at Playland a year isn't going to be relative when you turn around to the board and the board says, no, we want it to be a park, right? Still. And Mr. Oros, just to point out to you, you said, where in here does it say that? There's several places, but I will point out the one that says, on parkland alienation, if the successful proposal involves an alienation of parkland at Playland Park or a portion thereof, the county would pursue approval. That sounds to me that that's not something I would approve. If we did this at this table, that line would not be in there.
You already did it at Playland. Right? You already did it for a portion.
We did it for a portion of Playland from 2001 when I wasn't on the board as well.
You re-ratified just recently.
We re-ratified the portion of Playland about the Children's Museum because of a technical amendment, which was unanimously supported by this board, right? But I'm not positive that in sending out a proposal to the world to say this is the case. The other question, and going back to Mr. Rogowski's point, there was no reason for the timing to be the way it was, other than to say what the administration has been saying consistently throughout the summer, And it's been a consistent position, and that's fair, right? To say, you know what, we think we got to do an RFP. You know, we could have started with an RFI process to say, you know what, we're going to do something and set this date up. The pre-proposal meeting is October 13th, right? We, on August 9th, we had a resolution which was much shorter than this one, right? Which was basically just saying, hey, we want Public Works and budget appropriations to be part of the RFP that you all in the administration are shaping, to have some input and say, before we send that out, we want to make sure we're on the same page. Right? We want to make sure that we send the message out to the world, to echo Mr. Rogowski's point, that we're looking at all types of alternatives. And if we want to say whatever those alternatives are, great, but it's inside of a framework. Again, I went and started with the word develop because that's the message that people would get, right? You know, the first thing that they see is develop and do something different. And the only things that are excluded in the RFP are the tiki bar, because we have that already under a lease that's 5 years long with a couple of extensions, and the Edith Reed Sanctuary, right? And everything else is wide open. And not breaking down the course, as Mr. Rogowski was talking about from the very beginning. It's a park, right? We've gone through these discussions. You were on the other side of the table, Mr. Earls, but Mr. Tartaglia and the team has come in previously and explained to us how the cost for playland by actual county resident that uses it is the cheapest park we run in Westchester County, right? The cheapest one, right? Now, that does mean it makes money, because it doesn't. The directive from this board through budget and appropriations wasn't to make money, it was not to cost the taxpayers money. That's a far different argument. And quite honestly, we would have had that discussion around the table in shaping the RFP. So I would submit to you, Mr. Chairman, that while the resolution, while someone would say, well, the RFP went out the door already, I would respectfully submit that it is not too late for us to add an additional input, especially given the fact of the timeline is that October 13th is the pre-proposal meeting, and that their final submissions aren't due until February of 2011. Certainly there was a question on time, on how expeditiously we could work through the committee structure in helping to give input. That's part of the reason why the resolution actually was whittled down to say that a working committee, meaning budget and appropriations or public works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation, would have an opportunity to help give that refinement that's necessary. So when we have our October 13th meeting, the concerns that the legislators have, and that's all 17 of us that may have, could be incorporated in that. And this way, when it goes out to the world, and we have in this pre-proposal meeting, we're getting back a product that, you know, something may be blue sky, et cetera. I know with all of us were really interested in reading, you know, the winner of the Phil Reisman, you know, context. But I know, I hope Mr. Tartaglia was chuckling, and the administration members and members that have been involved in this were chuckling on the winning suggestion. The winning suggestion basically was stuff we're already doing, right? That we already have taken the concessionaire rides away to bring more money into the county to get the bottom line cost to zero. We put in expenses, and we spent a lot of money investing in things that would reduce the amount of money that was walking away, which, you know, I believe Mr. Tartaglia and former Commissioner Stout and Dan McBride said clearly that when we implemented that the new money system, the credit card system that is attached to the fund bands, etc., we reduced the amount of money that was walking away and bringing board to the county. All that being said, again, Mr. Chairman, is that I believe that, and both you, Chairman, because both of you have a passion for playland, as do many of us around the table, and knowing what we put in. Having an RFP, I believe all of us support going out to the world. Hey, is there somebody out there that could be doing it better, stronger, faster? We had the experience when we, not at Playland, well, we did have that experience at Playland, which wasn't successful, but we also had it at with Billy Casper running the courses that we had, and we went away from that because we had our own experience that was going to cost us less money than we were giving to Billy Casper, right? So we have all those pieces that would have been great to help use that mindset to help shape an RFP that, again, it's the administration's RFP, right? And they're the ones that would get the responses, and at the end would make a recommendation to the board for consideration. But having those facts up front would be helpful. So again, Mr. Chairman, I respectfully submit that we can still move on a resolution that gets us at least on record and saying the board's position is that we wanted to help shape some of this now that we're is out here. I know I made a recommendation, Mr. Rogalski, to the deputy county executive on July 30th when he received the first draft of the RFP and said that, you know, we asked that we could see it, you know, ahead of time. You know, we kind of wanted to see it earlier. And the July 30th, he had just received it. Mr. Orles was on vacation, so it was not an opportunity for them to review it. They said they were going to review it over the weekend and try to get it to us, you know, in the beginning of August, right? And then we proposed this RFP after the resolution, after several media outlets were reporting that an RFP was imminent and going to be done. And to be clear on the record to say that we want to participate, right? Because we have the decision at the end. But we also want to make sure that we're not giving the wrong messages to people. I cannot tell you, Mr. Chairman, how many people have walked up to me, oh, you're not going to close Playland. You're not going to close Playland. It's a constant question. I'm like, no, we're not closing Playland. It's a park, right? It's not. Now, I may get managed differently. We may see some different opportunities. But at the end, it's still going to be a park. So to your point, Mr. Rogalski, we have been trying. It seems to me the only way to make sure that we have the conversations is at the table here, so that everyone is on record on it and doing that. But I think that, Mr. Chairman, of budget appropriations, that it's certainly going to be appropriate for us to have a resolution that says that we want to do this. It certainly will give an opportunity between now and October 13th to make the modifications that's necessary, and we certainly can send out more than one RFP. We have done that around this table before. We've given that example with people may or may not appreciate with the 450 and the voting storage, where we made them do three separate. We made the prior administration so that Mr. Astorito, the county executive Astorito, doesn't feel like we're doing this because it's him, right? No, we do this because we're the board of legislators and we make these decisions, and we certainly made them do three separate RFPs, including site visits for a lot of us that went out for site visits for that particular thing. All we're going to do with this particular resolution is to make that the sense of the board, so the administration has it, and then this way we can make the improvements. And I think that, again, it'll only make things better, Mr. Chairman.
That brings the resolution to the table for discussion or for a motion.
You don't need this, right?
No. Because this has been moved forward from parks so long. Any further discussion? Any change to this resolution as presented would cause the other committee to have to take it again.
I apologize for not being at last week's meeting. I try to make every meeting possible, but I wasn't there. I know this came out of parks, but I didn't have any input to it. So I want to renew what I first set out.
And your point has been taken, Mr. Ball.
I don't know why we want to limit it to bolstering attendance, what needs to be done to improve.
Those are whereases. I think if you concentrate the thoughts of the result, that's the message that we're sending. So, and that's what the Budget and Appropriations Committee is going to take on now.
So moved for budget and appropriations we pass this resolution.
And I will second it, but Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a comment to Mr. Burroughs' point about the whereas. The reality, as you stated so eloquently, when we went through this in parks, we had many discussions about the whereas, and we decided the whereas, we understand, we do enough resolutions, the whereas isn't the meat. It's really in the resolution, in the resolve parts, and the resolve parts is giving a very, very big box to work in, right? That we would work with the administration in shaping this particular thing. Now, of course, we said in the resolution, we'd like to do it before it goes out, all right? It's already out, but that's all right. We can send out another one with some modifications. And I think that way it works, again, to send clearly the message, whatever it is, right? Because, I mean, I'm not going to presuppose what members are going to come up with. They might say, hey, the RP is fine the way it is. I personally don't think so, but I think that would be the right thing.
I'll move and second it. Yes, Mr.
Regas. On the motion, with all due respect to my good friend and colleague from Yonkers, our chair. You know, I had questions last week, and
Public Works when we did this. We made a few changes. I just failed to understand how we would pass a resolution with a resolve clause asking for our input and consent when there is an RFP out there. Now, you're saying that, well, we put another one out. It seems to me it's out. If you wanted to start saying, well, let's put something in the resolve clause, what we think the next RFP should include, or what it should not focus on. I raised some point. I thought it had to focus on the wrong point. That if we want to, you know, give some direction to the public, even, because we may or may not do another RFP, but this board can certainly speak to those who will be responding prior to them coming to that pre-submittal meeting in October. They might be interested in knowing the thoughts of one of the deciders in this process, and I could see sending out a resolution. Now that we've seen the RFP, we can reflect on it and maybe pass a resolution highlighting either our concerns or where we agree and where we think. Now, those of you who are going to be responding to it, you know, you may want to consider things that we think are important. So I might be willing to support a resolution that went down that road that set some guidance from the board. So that might, but this resolution, I mean, I don't know if the press is here, but, you know, for us to be writing a resolution to say, you know, we're sitting here, passing, you know, give us consideration, input, consent, and it's out. I just have had real trouble from the just the man on the street or the woman on the street looking at what we do here, part of our business, you know, taking our time to pass that resolution. I say, you want to amend it the way I suggested earlier, giving some of our direction, maybe so. But this as is, I respectfully say, I need to vote no. I voted for last week. It wasn't out yet. Now that it's out. Now that it's out, I'm clearly going to vote no against this one. I would consider a different kind of resolution.
I think you voted no last time.
Yeah. 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 All right. Again, your concern is very well taken, as it was.
Horses left the barn.
So we're on discussion. So if I hear Mr. Rogowski correctly, what you're saying is we had one of the committees of this board, Public Works Parks, pass the resolution prior to the issuance of the RFP, all right? The RFP was then issued, and the timeline proceeding ahead, now we have a budget committee with the same resolution that was passed by our other committee earlier last week with that same resolution. What you're saying is you've made the case for not handling this one. But you would be agreeable to handling one that states that the resolve clause would direct the county executive and the board of legislators to develop a request for proposal that would deal with the use and management of Pleasant.
No, I wouldn't request the creation of another RFP. I would set forth those who are reading the RFP out there. These are our policies. I mean, instead of writing the RFP, let's state in the resolution what our concerns, what we would be putting in that other RFP. These are our concerns. As you come back, because you have a time frame to answer all these questions, but keep in mind, if you don't address our concerns, like we're not interested in IKEAs, we don't want to sell a lot of, you know, if you don't address our concerns, you may be wasting your time. At the end of the day, no one may answer the damn RFP because they say, geez, you know, we don't really know. We hear the board has questions, not necessarily sure what they are. We better just punt on this thing. It could be the form of another RFP. I'm just saying,
the
only thing I'm suggesting is that the reality is that because of the timelines that has been set forth by the administration in this particular RFP, it gives an opportunity for an amended RFP to go out. And there's not a question about that. And if you wanted to change the language instead that, you know, it was before the RFP, it's like, okay, the amended RFP, well, whatever. I think we're slicing and dicing.
Well, if we put some of our concerns, it would give some substance to this resolution.
No, I'm saying to you that the resolution was out in front of the board, although it was out on the board for unanimous consent, which was not given, to be there on August 9th, right? Mm-hmm. This particular resolution was voted out of this committee, Mr. Chairman, which day
Monday
was it? Monday afternoon, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Or Monday afternoon, right? In conversations with the administration on Thursday, we were advised that they were not ready to go, right, on this particular item, and then it went out on Friday. you know, in all fairness and all things, you know what, Mr. Grassley?
That's not an accurate statement, Ken.
What do you mean, was it accurate?
We told you on Thursday that this was coming out.
You said on Thursday, Kevin Plunkett. Leadership, Kevin Plunkett said it was not ready, it was not, you were still reviewing it, and it was not imminent, it was not coming out the next day, right?
You heard something different than I heard.
Well, that may be true.
He said it would be coming out momentarily. That was the words I recall him saying. But go ahead, continue.
It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that we've been making it very clear over the last several months that the board wanted to be a participant in helping.
All right, listen,
so that's where it is. That's what
these people.
So I think you like it.
The only thing I would suggest is that this board, acting through its Public Works, Parks, Labor, Transportation Committee, went on record, took up the issue of the resolution, acted on it, reported it to the full board. If at this point, because budget and appropriations is mentioned, if Budget and Appropriations Committee, if the majority committee members would like to join in support of Public Works and the action that they took, and Parks, the action they took last week, then this is a vehicle to do it.
Yep. All right, and the item has been moved and seconded, and I'm going to move forward at this point. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Me.
Okay.
Note that I'm a nay, even though I know I'll vote on the budget, but I wasn't here on Parks. Right.
Okay, the resolution moves forward. Mr. Warros, Mr. Tapelia, thank you so much. I think the concerns are on the floor. We don't have to come to these resolutions if we felt as a board we were fully engaged, but we don't feel we are. Thank you very much. All right, that is the final joint item we had, Mr. Chairman, I think, for...
It's the final joint item. Let me just say this.
Oh, we can't meet with George. I got legislation.
Are you going to do rounds tomorrow?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. George, Peter, thank you. Appreciate you being here. Pete's like a man of few words. Let me just say to the Parks Committee, as I've mentioned a number of times through the spring and at a meeting, if you remember, where we took up this as a work item, all right? I know that none of you intend on being bystanders. I know that none of you view our role as a passive role in all of this. There is one important point I believe we should remember here. Playland will have a future. It is up to us as a board to decide what that future is going to be. Depending on which way we go, there will be different ways that can be administered or managed. It is up to us to decide how that will happen. And we're kind of right at the beginning then. And we need to pay attention to this, because it's a big decision when the time comes and we do actually get the administration to share with us some of the solicited proposals. We're going to have to recognize which ones don't even come close to our collective view as to what we're doing with Playland, and which ones perhaps may serve as valuable tools for us in the work that we have to do. Whether there's an RFP out there or not, it doesn't diminish one bit the responsibility that we have to take up this issue and resolve it in a way where we feel we're taking action in the best interest of taxpayers of Westchester. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, at this point, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move forward with the balance of the budget.
And I entertain the motion to adjourn.
So
Public Works, a motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Public Works.
I already invited Ms. Alessia to join us so that we can hopefully dismiss. But in the interest of time, I am going to postpone item 3377 to be visited on Tuesday, the 7th. It's Performance measures, this one, resolution. All right, so we will not be discussing the other started item in budget and appropriations, and we're going to move on to item 3258. You're here for the three items anyway, so
right.
The order doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, the order doesn't matter.
Okay, outside counsel, Ms. Alessio, welcome. And thank you for your patience. I apologize.
Thank you.
No problem. This is a request from the county attorney's office to be able to retain outside counsel because of the conflict that we have in a federal action that was commenced by an inmate who claims that he was assaulted by a correction officer. The defendants, except for the correction officers, are all being represented by the county attorney's office, but because of a conflict, we cannot represent him. We've presented this matter to the litigation subcommittee, and it's the county attorney's recommendation that we retain Jonathan Kraut, who is a partner in Friedman, Carpenter, Kraut, and Perlstein.
Your assistant took it.
Their offices are in Purchase, New York. He has experience in civil rights litigation and federal court practice. His hourly rate is $215, so we're requesting that budget and appropriations approve the matter so it can be voted on by the board. Our time to respond has been extended through the end of September.
Okay, and this is a not to exceed. I don't see a number.
The not to exceed we put in was $200,000.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, moved by Mr. Jenkins.
Second.
Second by Mr. Avenatti, member of the subcommittee.
I'm just noting that the subcommittee had extensive discussions on this and concurred with the recommendation of the county executive.
All right, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Item moves forward. Okay, the next item is item 3308, lump sum settlement.
These are three former employees of Westchester County who have all suffered workers' comp injuries in various departments in the county. Once you have been determined to have a permanent disability, the county is obligated to pay workers' comp weekly wage benefits to the employees. Triad handles these cases for the county, and they have been able to negotiate settlements with three employees. The first is DF. He works in environmental facilities. He has a life expectancy of about 13 and a half years. The county's total exposure, should we continue to pay him his weekly wages and not sell this right now for present day value, is $353,600. Triad was able to negotiate a lump sum settlement to sell all of the wage obligations for the county at, I think it's $169,000. So we would get a savings of $184,600 if we settled DF.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Just in the interest of time, I mean, just for the litigation subcommittee,
we've gone through all the numbers. The only thing I would ask you to do is to reveal the names of the lawyers, because I believe this is one where any of the lawyers here may want to note if they have business dealings with them.
I'll give you the names of the three counsel. And this is a result in a savings over $1 million to the county if we agree to this lump sum settlement. DF is represented by Hoffman, Wachtel, and Kaiser at 399 Nullwood Road. The former employee SP is represented by David Silverstein of Fine, Olin, and Anderman in Newburgh, New York. And KF is represented by Barry Weiss of Friedman, Wagner, to Hoffman and Weiss in New City, New York.
I just want to reveal on the record that in the past I've had business dealings with the first law firm in one of its formations. I don't know if it was with the present firm or with a previous iteration of the firm. I've had nothing to do with this lawsuit and haven't had any business dealings with that firm in quite some time. I may have had dealings with the second one. The name sounds familiar, but that would have been even more in the more distant past.
Right.
Again, I have no connection with those lawyers today, know nothing about these cases other than what you told us. I don't think I have any conflicts, but I think it's necessary for me as an attorney to reveal that on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And since we have two other lawyers present, I think it's important that we...
Only one.
Only one.
Well, you got two here. One and two.
Yeah.
He's not on
here. And I think perhaps we should make sure that all of the other legislators on the board are aware of the identity of these before they vote, so that they can make any disclosures if necessary. But the committee did consider these and does recommend that we go forward. It's a good
deal. What is SP and KF getting? The settlement
SP, the county's total exposure is $478,400, and the county is settling for $124,800, so we're saving over $353,000. And KF, total county exposure is 688,480. This settlement is 135,200, so we're saving $553,000.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? And last but not least.
Last but not least, the county attorney's office is requesting authority to settle a matter. It's Jeannie Wilson as administratrix of the estate of Denise McBride. Denise McBride was an inmate at the Westchester County Jail back in March of 2006, and she passed away while she was an inmate. She was standing on the desk in her cell. She was told not to. She wanted to speak to an inmate above. She was told to get down. While she was getting down from the desk, she fell against the table. She fractured her rib, which ended up lacerating her liver. She was given medical attention in her cell, was given some aspirin, told to rest. That happened in the morning. She had three or four medical visits from medical staff throughout the day who gave her cursory examinations and told her to rest. At one point, she was given an inmate to do direct observation. Later on that evening, early evening, the correction staff realized that she was faint and vomiting. She was finally transported to the medical center. There were issues with the manner in which she was transported to the medical center. She was at the emergency room, passed away of cardiac arrest. The case is pending in federal court. She was 39 years of age at the time of her death. The judge who was assigned to the case strongly urged all the parties to go into mediation. The parties all went into mediation, and basically all of the defendants who are named here, the medical center, the nurse who gave the cursory examinations of the inmate, her employer, the county, and the ambulance service were all basically, it was agreed upon, we're going to pony up some money in order to make this case go away and to settle it. The county's share is $200,000. The medical center is paying $25,000. The nurse who gave the cursory examinations is paying $311,000. Her employer, J&K Healthcare Services, is paying an additional $311,000. And the ambulance service is paying $253,000 for a total of $1.1 million.
Mr. Chairman, if I can comment.
Yes, yes. Please.
What apparently has happened here is all of the parties have decided we have to come up with enough money to make this case go away. We don't have any idea who's going to get hit if a jury comes down with a judgment. It seems to be this is the normal settlement situation where there's a whole bunch of people who have no liability, and we're one of them. But you never can tell what a jury's going to, what's going to happen. $200,000 is probably not that much more than it would take to try the case in legal fees and whatever. And so the idea here is just chip in and let the case go away.
Right. I mean,
the other thing that I would say is that's a privatized nurse service, isn't it?
It is.
So once again, privatization comes through. Medical Center had nothing to do with this. They're putting some money in to make the case go away. We're putting some money in to make the case go away. Everybody's putting some money in just to make the case go away.
Right.
It's one of the bad parts of the system, but you don't have a choice. The people who were most responsible are paying something like what?
They're paying $622,000, and the ambulance company is paying $253,000. They're deemed to be the most responsible parties in this matter.
So when you add them together, that's the
$800,000.
So that's the bulk of it, and we're basically paying a little bit more than our legal fees would be, and our costs would be, and the aggravation would be, and to get rid of it, and to make sure that in the end we don't get hit with a judgment, because you don't know what a jury's going to do in the end.
Is that any culpability to the victim? Any culpability?
The only culpability or the claim against the county is the inadequate medical treatment because of the cursory, because it was in the facility. So it's the cursory medical examination that was done.
No, but I'm saying, did they attribute any of the blame to the person who was who died, who was standing on the desk or nothing?
No.
And that seems to be a problem to me. But,
yeah, and our correctional staff observed her deteriorating behavior and condition, but relied upon the nurse and took no action, and they could have taken action.
Yes, I remember the discussion, and this is more about the failure to properly respond after the victim got hurt, as opposed to allowing the condition to happen.
Yeah, it was all in the manner which
you're
we
right,
responded
to her
complaints.
You're right, because it was her own fault. She did some stupid stuff that she was told not to do. But once she got hurt, then there was
our responsibility.
Motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Evanette, second by Mr. Burton. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And one last item is the minutes, if somebody would move them.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Burton, second by Ms. Meyer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion to adjourn is in order.
Oh.
Second.
Seconded. All in favor?
All right. What do we have? Legislation in 10 minutes?
Legislation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we've got now.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Please sign.
Mr. Rogowski, please sign.
Mr. Witchell. Justice Shakeman is right here.
Yeah, please.
I will have to poll him.
Shakeman, sir.
I could do it on the phone, but
I mean, what is that?
Yeah.
Tom,
cancel. All right. Next.